were just showing off the air this new viral sensation where people throw slices of cheese at babies.
Yeah.
That really hurt. I'm going to have a lump there, you idiot.
It may be the dumbest thing that's ever been done on the internet.
That's right.
64 slices of American cheese.
My respect grew for both of you because, unlike these two dopes over here, you didn't laugh.
Right.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
Anybody that finds the baby cheese bit funny? I'm doing a new bit where, while you're at work, I electronically hack and drain your bank account.
Ah, that's
and
hysterical.
Then see if you cry.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Have you been up all night eating cheese?
I think I'm blind.
Feeling butt, butt, butt. Feeling butt, butt, butt. Feeling butt, butt.
Hold up.
Cold enough for ya?
Oh, shut up, fat ass.
No place to go, darling.
You know what? I think there should be a bracket for losers. I would be killing you guys. I think I'd be top five in the country.
How many Final Four teams you got?
Let's see. Auburn, new. Texas Tech, new. I might have Virginia. I got to go back and look.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have Michigan State.
Wait, isn't Texas Tech a Final Four?
Yeah, didn't I say Texas Tech?
He said he doesn't have Texas Tech.
He said you don't have them.
Yeah.
You do or you don't?
He does. No, I don't.
Oh.
Hey, easy, Perry Mason.
I have two.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Which two, Mayor?
Michigan State and Virginia.
All right, Kansas State and the Virginia bracket. Okay, so I got zero, right? I got nobody in the Final Four? I'm 0-for.
You have a perfect bracket.
Now, this is a true story. Ross Cochran asked his daughter, my granddaughter, Abigail Cochran, to pick a bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he went through, he probably said mascots, or he said, you know, just the names or whatever. She's beating me in the family brackets.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's 3.5. So, as Donald Trump says when he calls each week, later, loser.
Yeah.
What did I say the morning after the first day of the tournament? On that Friday morning, I said...
Well, I think you said you sucked.
Well, I did. Yeah. But I also said, don't look at your brackets today and just kind of see how it all turns out.
The Orion Samuelson thing.
There was this, don't look at your 401k. And, you know, I'm not as bad as I thought I was.
Well, you're climbing. You've been climbing ever since that disastrous first weekend.
Yeah.
So, who's leading?
I believe it is...
Still New Girl?
No. It is one of our... fine salespeople.
Which weasel?
Well, which pool are you talking about?
The
illegal station gambling pool run by the
one run by people, not us.
What about our little group? Do we know who? I know I've got Michigan State winning in the final.
Well, you're married to a guy that went to school there.
I had to pick them. He picked Duke. He didn't even pick Michigan State.
Oh, that's funny. A lot of people picked Duke.
I have Michigan State facing off against St. Mary, so that was...
I don't like St. Mary's chances. I'm going to be honest with you.
And for legal reasons, the newsroom disowns this illegal gambling pool. It is the Ryan Burrow. So if the feds are coming after anybody, it would be Ryan.
Right. And feel free to raid the newsroom anytime.
No.
Yeah.
The leader, by the way, is Kevin McDonough.
Oh, we like Kevin.
Sales staff.
Plus, he's got three kids. He's got three kids under the age of 6 months.
Yeah, he could use some money.
Yeah,
sure.
That's right.
Followed by another member of our sales staff with his first bracket and then his second bracket.
Who's that?
Steve Godsell. Again, I have a big problem with that.
Well, I didn't know you could do two within the same pool. That's
How about
silly.
Ryan Burrow, who runs the pool? He's got three.
That doesn't seem right.
Doesn't.
Steve, you mentioned Kevin McDonough and how we like him and he has all those kids. He was on that trip to Arizona with you and Dave.
Actually, he came out later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, he was with clients, but he said the highlight of the trip was sleeping through the night because he wasn't home with the kids.
I bet, yeah. You remember that tired Dave? I remember, that's funny, I was thinking about this weekend, that specific looking at your kids going, I love these kids more than life, but I have never been this tired, and I'm going to feel like this until they're 18.
Yeah.
Morning radio was a great reason not to get up for the 2 a.m. feeding.
Yeah.
That was the excuse. Oh, I got to get up
too.
In an hour.
Yeah, no, I exploited that as well.
But then on the weekends, It was all me.
Sure.
So you're always tired.
My son has a 4-month-old and a 20-month-old, and they sleep through the night.
Well, that's crazy.
22-month-old, yeah. Wow. They're sleeping through the... Oh, I got better knock on something.
They're playing them like man cow tapes? How are they keeping them asleep?
I don't know asleep? What they're doing, but okay. Not every single night, but most nights, yeah. It's great.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I want to thank the people at the Beverly Arts Center. DeCoste and I were out there Saturday night.
Yeah.
And I met Bridget Gaynor's family, two of her 48 sisters, and her lovely mom. And, as you know, they just lost their dad a couple of weeks ago, dad and husband, Bill Gaynor. And he was a huge deal on the South Side, but a bunch of people turned out for that and raised a bunch of money for the Beverly Arts Center. And DeCoste and I are doing a show out there. I think it's in August.
Wait,
might be September.
No, it's September, but are you officially allowed to announce that?
Yeah, we can announce it because we don't know the date yet. We're still working out the date with the dude that runs the place.
I don't want to ruin
So the tickets aren't on sale yet, but we know we're going to be there in September.
I think you've got a couple shows in September, if I know your booking person.
Yeah, there's going to be a busy fall. But at any rate, thanks to everybody who had us out there. Oh, by the way, Bridget's sister, one of her sisters, had a baby 2 weeks ago. Oh. And she was at the event. It's her first time leaving the house since they brought the baby home. Looked unbelievable. Amazing. And said a very sweet thing to me. She said, I listen every Friday.
When Bridget's on.
Yeah. I said, the show's on Monday through Thursday as well.
And then she said, I watch Mike Toomey every morning.
I do. Yeah, I've gotten that before. Hey, I saw you on Channel 9. Did you? Okay. 6:16. We'll come back with the top six at six in a moment. Any tragedies, horrible things that happened this weekend? Show-worthy stuff? Anybody? 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 Anybody?
No.
All right. Quiet weekend for the show.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60 Minute Men.
All right, let's go with item number one. It's April Fool's Day, and this is a day where many people will play April Fool's jokes. It doesn't allow you to become a talk show host. It doesn't get you into show business. It's just fun for you and your family. And my thoughts at a time like this go to Ellen. Ellen DeGeneres, who's turned into the meanest person in show business. Her entire wacky little game show is an April Fool's joke.
I watched it last week.
It's just mean.
It's really kind of sadistic.
Yeah. Slamming people into slime pools.
She comes off as such a nice person. And then
she used to be.
Spins these people around in midair and throws stuff at them.
I've known her since the 80s, and we haven't talked in years, and something happened. I think I may need to do an intervention.
Do you have a good April Fool's thing that you've ever pulled off?
Nah, see, it's kind of amateur day.
Okay.
But I will tell you, my mom did something very funny when I was about eight, nine. And she was funny, but she wasn't, she wasn't doing shtick. So I used to go grocery shopping with her because, whatever the reason. And we were driving home, and there was this sort of, I grew up in the country, this dirt road that you would kind of shortcut back to the road that would take us to the big house. And the big house, the 1,800 square foot house. And on the dirt road, it's raining. The dirt road, she goes, "What's that? What is that noise?" Stevie, that was my name when I was a kid. Stevie, get out and check that tire. Just take a look and tell me what you're seeing. So I get out, look at the tire. And keep in mind, it's raining. I get out, I look at the tire, and she takes off. She just takes off. She drives like 500 yards down the road, around a corner, laughing her head off. So I jog up to the car, and I, what? She goes, "April Fools."
Oh, wow.
Pretty funny. Now, not so funny then.
Right.
It was nine.
See, that's the equivalent of throwing a piece of cheese at you.
No, it's not. I watch those videos. Don't get me started.
Now, if we actually got cheese here, I would do that, and it would be a very popular video.
It would be. I think if we could get Abigail to throw cheese at your face, that would be the most popular video.
Yeah.
That would rival JoJo Siwa and, the West Child.
It's Monday.
Oh, you're going to see Abigail.
Abigail Grace Monday, so I might, maybe I can set that up.
Get you some cheese slices.
What we're referring to is this idiotic internet trend where grown-ups take slices of cheese and lob them onto babies' heads, and then the babies, generally speaking, cry because they're going, "Why is my why are my parents right. throwing cheese at me?"
It's the
just
worst.
Mean. It's just and it's dogs.
Ridiculous.
And they're throwing them at dogs.
Dogs will survive.
And dogs sometimes
one,
eat them.
The dogs one, I don't understand, because if I threw a piece of cheese at my dog, he'd catch it mid flight, and that would be the end
Let
of it.
Let me tell you, you throw a piece of cheese at me, I'll eat it.
I think that the dogs
are pie at you when you ate it.
I don't think the dogs are eating it because that's not real food. That's chemical square orange slices.
Dogs
you know?
Don't know. Dogs
my dog doesn't differentiate. Okay.
Super Joe played that at the top of the hour. It's a little recap of the cheese. It's so funny. It has
it's
Homer Simpson
funny.
In it.
It's not funny.
I think it's really
it's not
John
funny.
DeCasse and I thought it was funny, and John's a comedian.
Yeah well, John's wrong, and you're wrong.
Messed up my sports cast.
Couldn't
here.
A baby suffocate if the cheese landed in the wrong place?
Well, I don't think the cheese will stay on the breathing apparatus of the child that long. But it's still, it's a very stupid trend. I want to know who thought of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that guy got a job. I read that. I'll look it up.
I heard it was the same person that thought of the Tide Pod Challenge.
Ugh, so crazy. Anyway, April 1st also marks the end of some winter parking bans, and it introduces a street sweeping ban. So keep your eyes open for the orange signs that indicate when parking's allowed in Chicago city streets. Not all streets rely on the orange attention-getting signs. Some arterial streets have permanent signs which state which days parking is prohibited. And you know, the cool part about that, Steve, is some of those parking signs are so faded, you couldn't read them if you had a hieroglyphics expert from a university.
Yeah, especially the times.
And then sometimes, and this happened on my street a couple times last year, somebody comes in the middle of the night and takes the signs down and throws them on the ground so you can't see them, and then you get caught.
So, if you park in the city, just plan on your car being towed. Just park in the city and just plan on your car being towed, so park anywhere you want.
I've had to reread and reread. I'll sit there and, like, what is this sign saying to me? Is it saying I can be here or not? Because sometimes there's other things in play on the sign, and I'm easily confused.
Well, in the parking, no parking from here till corner.
Right.
But then the arrow's gone on
right,
a sign.
And you're like, well, where is it?
From the sign to the corner? From me to the corner? Next. Election Day is tomorrow, and at the request of Reverend Jesse Jackson, Lori Lightfoot, and Tony Preckwink will hold a unity news conference Wednesday morning following the election. Tuesday, the race will be over. The healing must begin, said Reverend Jackson. In a semi-related story, and later on this morning, Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson will be on. The Reverend, and I use the term loosely, Al Sharpton, was visiting Rainbow Push this weekend and slammed, not just Mayor Emanuel, but slammed Eddie Johnson as well. And said the only reason Kim Fox is under scrutiny is because she's a powerful black woman. Rev, with all due respect, shut up and go back to New York. You have no idea what you're talking about. This is just ridiculous. Next. The former vice president defended himself after a former Nevada legislator, a woman named Lucy Flores, accused him of kissing and touching her during a Democratic campaign rally in 2014. The accusation is she's running for office. I think it was lieutenant governor at the time. He's standing behind her. He puts his hands on his shoulder, on her shoulders, leans in. She said he smelled her hair and kissed her on top of the head. Weird. Violating personal space. But Vice President Biden has always been the huggy, touchy-feely type. It doesn't mean this woman shouldn't have been creeped out by it. But she said this is not some sort of sexual assault. She said, I just felt like my personal space was invaded. This, of course, has turned into a giant news story, including involving a woman who is the wife of the former Defense Secretary Ash Carter, who on the day that he was sworn into office slid on ice outside and fell. Was woozy, in her words, when she got inside for the swearing-in ceremony. And the vice president stood behind her with his hands on her shoulders and told her he would. This is all from her. This is her, you know, telling of the story. She said, not only was it not an invasion of my space or my privacy or concerning to me, it was a very nice thing to do because I felt sickly. This is a woman who is universally regarded as very strong, strong-willed, takes care of herself. And she said the same thing. So, again, the hypocrisy of politics, and it happens on both sides. But the idea that the guy who grabs the pee is in the White House and any Republican would stand up and go, ooh, look at Biden. Are you kidding me? Next. China announced today to treat all variants of the powerful opioid fentanyl as controlled substances. This is a big deal. If not the majority, a great amount of fentanyl in this country comes from China by mail. It makes good on a pledge that President Xi Jinping made to President Trump last year. This may be one of the best things Trump's done since he's been in office, to get President Xi to make this a legal issue in China. Now, of course, they have to follow up on it. But shutting down the supply of fentanyl, that's a huge deal from China. Next. Rolling Stones have postponed their tours. Mick Jagger is receiving medical treatment. Well, my God, the man's 75. Of course he's receiving medical treatment. He probably goes to the doctor every couple of days. But he said he hopes to be back soon. We have no idea what the treatment is. But it continues to be the great mystery of the Rolling Stones. There's several people in the Rolling Stones, including Ron Wood, who actually left the band, who have had medical issues. Keith Richards, who looks like he died sometime during the 70s, continues to be the healthiest member of the band.
He looks very pickled. But
I'm not convinced he's not dead.
I'm so bummed about this, though. Poor Mick.
He'll be fine.
It's terrible. They say it's just, some sources are saying it's a physical injury. Others are saying it's a
he fell and broke his hip.
Health problem. So I don't know what it is.
And next, Dave, the final four is who?
The final four is Michigan State, it's Auburn, it's Virginia, and it's Texas Tech. Michigan State will play Texas Tech, and Auburn plays Virginia. Virginia is the only one seed that made it.
Auburn and Texas Tech, both first-timers?
Both first-timers. Virginia hasn't been there since the Ralph Sampson era. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Michigan State's been there a bunch, eighth time under Tom Izzo.
Normally, the mix in the past few years, if not the top four or five seeds, has been two, three top seeds, and a Cinderella has come in. We haven't seen this where threes to sevens or lower have had this kind of run.
Yeah, you have Auburn's a five. Mm-hmm. That's the lowest seed. Last year, Loyola.
Was Virginia a two?
Virginia's a one.
Oh, Virginia's a one.
They're the only one seed that made it. Last year, of course, Loyola was the 11 seed.
That got now, I believe the 2 years ago, it was all four number ones made it, right? The last couple of years,
yeah,
3 years ago?
It's been a few more years than that. But yeah, it's only happened, I believe, one time since the current format was put in place in the mid-80s. So it doesn't happen very often.
And that'll be in Minneapolis this weekend?
Minneapolis.
Are they playing that at the Vikings' new stadium, I
see? Yeah, at the U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's your top six at six. I hope you've learned something. And we'll come back in just a moment with the headlines.
That's it!
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine BP. Dr. Most right now.
He's the busiest guy I know, and every spring around this time, my friend Dr. Most says, you know, we're going to play more golf this year. But no, all he does is work. Work, 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 work. Plus, the lovely Patty lives in North Carolina, so you go back and forth to North Carolina. So I'm surprised your dogs haven't filed a lawsuit against you. When are you home?
Yeah, they actually should file a lawsuit against me. But I actually played three times in the last 4 days. So
yeah, but you're in North Carolina,
a little
right?
bit guilty. Yeah. Got to play with my uncle. Got to play with your good friend, Peter DeYoung.
How's he doing?
And he's doing great.
I got to check in with him.
Yep.
And our mutual pal, Emil Esposito, is teaching again. So I'm going to throw his phone number out. So anybody that wants a golf lesson from one of the all-time greats, you got to get that lined up.
He's a wonderful person and a wonderful teacher. And if anybody wants to take lessons, he's the guy because he doesn't get super technical.
No, he doesn't get super technical. He looks at you, and he works with you to make your game better. And by the way, Dave, I believe he's helped you quite a bit.
He's helped me quite a bit. And you know what he said to me? It wasn't technical. He said, your grip's awful, your swing's awful. He said, we're going to fix it. And he did.
Yeah.
The famous story here, Doc, and I think you know it, is that Bob Collins and Orion Samuelson were doing a trip to Hawaii. I don't know if it was business or pleasure. But they weren't golfers, and they wanted to get some golf lessons before they went because they were going to play Kaanapali on Maui, which is this golf course where nine holes are at sea level, and the other nine are up in the mountains. And so they started to take lessons. And
it's really pretty, but really hard.
It is hard, yeah. They started to take lessons, and the lessons didn't go well, and Orion eventually kind of got out of it. Collins didn't quit. And Emil got so frustrated with Collins at one point, he went out on the driving range about 60 yards in front of him, stood there and went, hit me! Just hit me! And he couldn't hit him. So, and then the my favorite part of the story, as Orion tells it, is, and by the way, Orion's 85th birthday yesterday. They get to Hawaii, and they had to send the beverage cart girl back to the clubhouse for balls. Not for beverages, not for a sandwich. They ran out of golf balls.
That's a little embarrassing.
Yeah, I think they both shot about 150, and they added them all up. All right, Doc, so we'll get to the subject at hand here in a second, but first, my cough is back, so, you know, I never like to make things about me, but I believe I'm representing most of Chicago when I say, what is the deal with this cough?
Yeah, and, you know, now I wish I could say, you know, anybody with springtime allergies, get ready, because as we get this warm-up, these coughs, these runny noses, all that's going to start to come back. You're going to start thinking, is this virus again? Am I sick again? And yet it's going to be the spring allergies that are really going to be kicking in here. For you, whether it's just, you know, a couple more days of just inflammation from the residual of that cough and that cold that you had for, God, you had it for over a month. Yeah, I wouldn't be overly concerned right now, but people will start to get frustrated. Anybody who's had that upper respiratory infection and now come into spring allergies.
Yeah, I know, but it's a cough,
yeah,
like a solo one-hitter, and then 2 minutes later it happens again. So Sandberg and Dave have to put up a listening to that all morning, and then if you hear me turn the microphone off because you don't hear me for a second, it's because I'm trying to time the cough while I interview somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, the troubles I have.
And cough is a defensive mechanism for us. Anytime you have any drainage that's going down, the body's trying to say, keep it out. So as you start to minimize the drainage, the amount of coughing will stop. And it can also be caused just by any inflammation and irritation. But, you know, I wouldn't be overly concerned if it's once every so often. I mean, Dave might be upset, Mary might be upset, but you shouldn't be concerned.
Just count on me coughing every 2 minutes.
No, we're not. Say, we're not upset.
We're not upset, yeah. But I would say it's probably every five. I mean, it's a consistent one cough.
Mm-hmm.
It's the
mm-hmm.
weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm. That's a kennel cough. And Doc, I was feeling good till I went to Arizona, and then I felt like I got it, you know, once I got off the plane again.
Yeah, two things there. One, going to Arizona, anytime anybody flies, we're concerned about it. But when you say, as soon as I got off the plane, it's because you're being exposed to things that you hadn't been exposed to. More allergens,
tourists.
More things down there because of plants that are popping down there than here. Anybody says, as soon as I got off the plane, I got sick. No, you didn't. As soon as you got off the plane, you got exposed to something that your body caused inflammation from.
Don't you mock me. All right, very important topic when we come back. We're going to talk about PTSD, and this is a big deal, and it's being handled better in some areas, and fortunately, a lot of areas, it's not being touched yet. But there are things you need to know about PTSD, about you or about somebody you love. And we're not just talking about military here. We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, really, in any form of life. It's Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. How'd you play, by the way?
I played fairly well the first day and okay after that. I played not bad. I mean, enjoyed it.
Was this at Pinehurst?
Yeah.
Patty beat you?
Once.
Nice. Yeah, I figured
so.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about PTSD. We say PTSD, we think of soldiers coming home from combat. Obviously, that's a huge, huge deal. And it needs to be treated the same. But we also know that PTSD victims can be victims of violent assaults and fire and physical or sexual abuse, car accidents. I mean, any significantly traumatic event in life, right?
Absolutely. Any of those that can trigger something and the trauma that continues in your mind can be triggered by many, many different things. And it's something that we need to be aware of because that PTSD, you're going to get those reminders, and it's going to come back and cause those stresses and those anxiety and the depression over and over again. So identifying those individuals is very key.
Now, here's what we know. These mass shootings that have gone on are obviously horrific. But in the last 3 weeks, the father of a little girl who was killed at Newtown killed himself. And this is a guy who's been an activist for other families and trying to make sensible changes in gun laws and all of that, and has been subjected almost daily to these unbelievably cruel, sick, twisted internet creeps talking about how your daughter didn't die, you're making it up, they're actors, you're an actor, the whole deal. And then we know that two teens who survived the Marjorie Stoneman shooting in Florida, in Parkland, also killed themselves, and some say survivor's guilt was the link there. But obviously, all of these folks had PTSD.
Yeah, and it is. It's that PTSD slash survivor's guilt, you know, especially for those high school students. And it's very sad because we see it in the media. You know, we get the big splash. We follow it for a week. And then for many of us, it goes away. But for those individuals that survive that and live through that, it doesn't go away. They went back to that same school. They're seeing their same friends. They're on their anniversary date of when this occurred, which unfortunately is February 14th. You know, every Valentine's Day, that's what's going to be their memory of Valentine's Day, of their friends that they lost during this. So PTSD is not, oh, I'm going to get treatment for a month and then I'm going to be done. This is something that is going to continue through their lives, and it's very important that we help identify these individuals to make sure they get continued treatment.
So are we seeing more of suicide risk and threats in teens, or are we hearing about it more?
No, well, both, actually. But we are, unfortunately, we are seeing more. You know, it probably surprised people, but suicide is the number two cause of death from the ages, between the ages of 10 and 24. That's a staggering thing to think about, that here we are, the healthiest that we've ever been in our lives, and yet the number two opportunity to die is from suicide. And the NIH just did a study where they took 6,000 kids that went to the emergency room for many different reasons and just asked them four simple questions. In the past few weeks, have you wished you were dead? In the past few weeks, have you felt or that your family would be better off if you were dead? In the past week, have you thought about killing yourself? Have you ever tried or thought about killing yourself? One-third of the kids tested positive between the ages of 10 and 12.
So
that's staggering.
No, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy, Doc. Yeah. And, you know, I have to say, I'm around kids. I have, you know, a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old. And like my parents did to me when they would say, you think you've got it rough. You don't know how rough I had it. You know, so-and-so drank and somebody threw this and that type of stuff. And you don't have to deal with that. But kids now have a different kind of pressure that we don't define, that isn't the kind of pressure we had. Where is the pressure coming from?
It's coming from a lot of different places. You know, in school, grades are so important right now. Kids are stressed to provide, you know, to get the best grades they possibly can, or they're going to not going to be able to go to college. So that's one thing, just the stress that we put on them. Look at the activities that these kids play in now. We used to play baseball on the street. We didn't play travel soccer, travel baseball. You have to be the best athlete you possibly can. And probably one of the ones that's the most discouraging is the cyberbullying. When you were bullied, when us, any of us, you know, here in the, you know, the five of us that we're talking here, when any of us were bullied, we were bullied in front of a small group of people by one individual, and as soon as it was over, you felt bad, but boy, it was done. With cyberbullying now, it's out there. It's shared with hundreds, if not thousands of people, and continue to be there. So that embarrassment and that stress of cyberbullying, so those are probably the biggest three. What we're doing with kids, pushing them in athletics as much as we can, what we're doing with school, and then cyberbullying.
Yeah, and the cyberbullying thing is why you need to stay in touch with what your kids are doing on Instagram and Facebook and wherever else they live online. And you'll get some bark back and, hey, why are you so nosy and stay out of my business and all of that. You're not there to be your kid's best friend. You'll be there to take care of your child and be the parent, and you need to be involved. And it's not snooping around when they're not looking. Just let them know as early as possible. You are going to be checking in on them. Just make sure they understand the rules.
Understand the rules and make sure that they trust you. You know, be there. You said you don't want to be their best friend. That's true. But you also want to be there to make sure that they're the one, they feel that you're the one that they can go to.
Right.
With a concern or a question or, you know, tell me what I should do or show me how I can get through this. You know, people come to the doctor's office. We screen for depression. We look for these things. But to be honest with you, in a 15-20 minute office visit, you're a smart kid. You can get through that without pushing that out. Because we don't know all the signs of depression. You know, are you having trouble sleeping? Do you feel anxious? Are you not doing things that you used to do that were a lot of fun? How are you doing in school? You know, how are you doing in school? I'm doing all right. We don't ask, well, did you used to get A's and now you're getting C's? So some of that stuff you guys need to see in your kids and see in your family members and bring those forward to the doctors to make sure that we can help them.
And like everything else you've said for years, don't write it off as it's just a teenager in a phase. Yeah, it could be. But what's the downside to finding out? What's the downside to saying we're going to go talk to somebody? Yeah, your kid's going to be mad at you, but you're going to get some peace of mind, and you're going to go through the process because some of the symptoms you mentioned, feels anxious or worried, frequent tantrums or changing to irritability many times, stomach aches, headaches without a physical explanation, can't sit still, trouble sleeping, loses interest in things they used to enjoy, avoid spending time with friends, trouble doing well at school, grades declining, fears getting heavier or skinnier, exercises, diets obsessively, and on and on, lower, no energy. Look, all of those behaviors partly could be written off as it's a kid going through a phase, but maybe it's not.
Yep. And we have to get past the stigma of depression and anxiety being something negative. You know, we talk about, hey, I'm going to teach you what to look for a stroke. And people, oh, I'm going to take care of that. But when we talk about this is what you need to look for with your child with the possibility of a depression or anxiety, they're like embarrassed. They feel like, oh, no, my kid's not depressed. You know, we have to understand that this is an illness, and it's not something that's a sign of weakness.
And it also is not a sign that you failed as a parent. There's a clinical chemical process in the brain that can be changed, and it doesn't mean you failed as a parent. Failure as a parent is not doing your job.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you think about what these kids are going through. Like I said, in school, we never had active shooter drills at school. So these kids are being totally, all the time, this is in front of them. It's on the news. It's on the media. It's on their phones. So we really need to, I hate to say, be more protective of our kids, but we really need to start looking out more because they are having more stress than we ever had.
All of these notes, and there's a lot here, will be posted with Doc's podcast. When does that happen, Samber?
In the next hour.
And also, Doc, somebody said, could I have PTSD from being fired? All jokes aside, yeah, of course you can, because it's
absolutely
a traumatic event, right?
Yep, absolutely. Hey, and Mayor, when you post it, can you also put the suicide prevention hotline number, 1-800-273-8255?
Absolutely.
1-800-273-8255. Last question. Somebody brought up EMDR as well, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Is that a form of PTSD?
No, I think it's a form of treatment, actually. I don't know, to be honest with you.
All right, so we'll talk about it next time. EMDR are the initials.
I will look it up.
Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. Well, therapy does make it sound like it's a treatment.
Yep.
Doc, as always, thank you very much. And hang on a second. I got to talk to you off the air and whine a little bit. You saw that coming, didn't you? Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. And we'll come back to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Here comes the sun, tootin' tootin'. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
712, it's actually hot in here. It's the weirdest thing. We got this incredibly beautiful studio, which looks out on one side of the city skyline and the river and the other windows. And these are floor-to-ceiling windows. Look at the lake and Navy Pier. So I'm not whining. Whining about other things, but not about this.
Yeah, you have the big old ball of sun that's warming things up.
Yeah, we get the greenhouse effect.
Yeah, that's a nice warming of that. Because, you know, when the sun comes up in the wintertime, it doesn't feel like that, does it?
Right, exactly.
So this means it's spring.
Well, it was also cold when I walked in here. I'm the first person in here aside from Super Joe. And I came in and it was really cold.
Well, it was dark.
It was cold and dark.
Yeah.
So I cranked the thermostat up and probably overcompensated. Yeah. To
what's
warm
that,
it up.
Well, what's
quickly.
That at now? 90?
It's at about 85.
Oh, yeah,
so I can turn it down.
Back. Yeah, well, let's cut that back.
But okay. At 8 o'clock, all of a sudden, the freezing cold air starts blowing on my feet in here. So it corrects itself.
Can I don't understand why you have cold air on your feet.
I don't know. That's where the breeze comes from. Our feet are dangling because we're in tall chairs now.
But is there a vent by your feet or something?
No. No, but that's where the air comes from. I know because my feet are the only thing exposed. My ankles.
Are you swinging them back and forth, creating an air circulation?
I bet that's it.
I do.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
I swing them side to side.
So you're creating air.
Yeah.
You're a poltergeist. Our friend Jeff Garland's on Channel 9 now. He'll be over here later this morning.
Dave is turning down the temperature right now, so he's
also
Mr. Cat also handles.
Yeah, he's
climate
quite
control.
He's quite handy. Ryan Nobles and Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson coming up as well. Listen, we got to talk about this horrible Uber thing. It's a young woman, 21 years old, college senior, about to graduate. She leaves a bar, I think it was Friday night at 2 a.m., comes outside, gets in the wrong car thinking it was her Uber. The guy takes her, kills her, throws her body in the woods. He apparently was stalking this particular bar and area. He went back. and the police were trailing the car on a tip. And he got out of the car and ran. When he saw the police, they caught him, and he's confessed to the crime. The point of the story is not just how horrific it is, and obviously everyone's sad for the family. And this animal is going to go to jail for the rest of his life, hopefully. But this can happen anytime, all the time, because of the popularity of Uber, right?
Yeah, and I was telling you, my sister uses. She lives in the city, and she works in the city, and she uses Uber and Lyft all the time, any rideshare. And she gets in the wrong cars all the time because she doesn't necessarily know the difference between a Toyota Camry and a Hyundai Sonata, and they both might say blue, because when you order one of these cars, it gives you the make, the model, the license plate, and the driver's name. But if you're not, you're busy, you know, you're not looking at license plates, you get in another blue car. And
or if you use Uber all the time, you get comfortable with the system.
Yeah, you're not, you know, your defenses are down.
Plus, if you're coming out of a bar and you've had a few drinks.
Yeah, a little buzzed.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I mean, she does it in plain day, too. She's gotten in the wrong car. So it's easily happens.
Well, Uber says, come to the car, tap on the window, match, first off, before you even approach the car, match the plate and the color with what you see on your app, then tap on the window and ask the driver his name, and the name has to match, and don't get in the car if any of those things don't match.
Well, that's even this weekend in Chicago, there was a limo driver that offered a woman a ride, even though she did not call a limo, and then got her in the car and ended up assaulting her. You know, don't probably shouldn't be getting in different cars. Your defenses need to be up all the time now.
Well, this is the yeah, obviously this could happen in a yellow cab, but right. But this is one of the great loopholes, if you will, that the one in a million murderers that's out there has an easier time hiding in an Uber car than he does in, you know, a yellow cab, or I guess in Lyft too, because you're telling me Lyft have lights on the dash?
They have the light, and the light, you can coordinate the color on your app with the light they show, so that way that can help you identify. Because when you're leaving, I don't know what their situation was, but when you're leaving a bar at a popular time or a restaurant, and there's a lot of Ubers, and because they're unmarked, and the thing about a cab, not that there's not murderous cab drivers out there, but you are calling it in the moment. You're mm-hmm. flagging that person to come over to you. You become very comfortable with, I just walk out and there's my Uber, you know, and you don't check. And sometimes, like Dave and I, we were having the discussion off the air, they always say your name to confirm that you're the right passenger. But Dave, he said his wife yells at him because Dave will say the driver's name first. And so the check and balance is right out
the
window.
Yeah, I'll say, hey, you're Steve? And the guy will say, you know, wave you in.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yes.
But you're supposed to wait for the driver
to say
your name. You're supposed
to wait for the driver to say your name. But I also always check the plates and the model of the car first.
I've never taken an Uber.
Yeah. It's quite convenient.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. But it's unfortunate. This is so sad for
well, it's horrific. And this guy, again, apparently was stalking this particular bar.
I mean, to come back and try to get another person is really, it's...
And the child locks were on in the back, so when she got in the car, even when she realized she was in trouble, she couldn't get out of the car.
Awful.
I was just watching a TV show, and I can't remember the name of it. It might have been Gone, or just a brand new show, and this was the premise of the whole show.
Is that right?
This serial Uber killer that picked up people, and it was just recently on,
And they, you know, the university put out a statement about travel together, you know, watch out for each other, be self-police, you know, like you be aware citizens, and that's good advice always, not just on a college campus, you know. Our kids, our 15-year-old is now of the age where the groups of friends do take Uber sometimes. But, you know, the rules are you never take it alone and you have to ask first so we know where you are, that type of thing. But still, it's on the onus of the person in the vehicle to check and make sure they're getting in the right car. And that's scary because the one time you might not be paying attention, look what happened to this girl.
Where was this again? What school?
Is it South Carolina?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
which is in Columbia, South Carolina. All right, 7:18. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We get to the most valuable person on the planet coming up. And then Ryan Nobles. Plenty to talk about with Ryan. Superintendent Eddie Johnson later. We'll see what he thinks about what Al Sharpton said this weekend, which was really stupid, what Al Sharpton said this weekend.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I'm so tired of the songs, tired of the songs, tired of the songs, tired of love. Just
wanna go home, wanna go home, wanna go home. Oh, so tired of the songs.
All right, 7:23 now. And this is an amazing story. Our most valuable person on the planet joins us now. It's Jordan Reeves. Jordan Reeves, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good.
You're 13 years old.
Yeah.
Eighth grade?
Seventh grade.
Seventh grade. How's school?
It's school.
Yeah. What's the best thing about it?
Lunch.
What are you having for lunch today?
I feel like that's an average answer. Though.
No, don't question your answer. What are you having for lunch today?
I have no clue.
You order from the cafeteria?
Yeah.
You know, I'm 58, and Dave, who does her show, is 104. And when Dave and I went to school, Jordan, they hadn't invented food yet. We just had water and oxygen.
Jordan, does your school have one of those awesome cafeterias where you can get whatever you want?
I mean, we can get chips.
Hey, chips are everything to me, so that works.
No, do you tell the truth at home when you eat the junk at lunch, or you don't tell your mom you just had quinoa and kale?
I think she knows. Ah. But
you have Doritos on your breath, son. Jordan Reeves is co-founder of the nonprofit Born Just Right, turning her prosthetic arm into a very cool thing. Before we get to that, you're 13 years old. You were born with one arm, right?
Yes.
Righty or lefty?
My left hand.
Okay, and when you were little, obviously you're still a kid, but you're getting old. You know that. You're 13. You're really getting old. You know that. You know that, right, Jordan?
I don't think I realized it. I feel like I'm still a toddler.
Jordan, I think you got a couple of good years ahead of you. That's all. That's all my point. So, Jordan, here's the deal. You, as a little kid with one arm, was it weird? Did it feel like you were, you know, somebody that couldn't do everything, or did you feel like you were included?
As a kid, no one really cared because, they grew up with me, so it wasn't, a surprise or anything.
Right.
So I definitely felt included, and if someone did think it was weird, I just thought it was funny.
It's all you knew. It's what you knew, right?
Yeah.
Right. And you can't let differences hold you back. This is the whole point of what Jordan does. So you came up with an idea to make other people understand that you can't let speed bumps in life hold you back, and it's called Project Unicorn?
Yes.
Okay, explain what that is.
Project Unicorn is a prosthetic arm that shoots glitter out of a unicorn horn.
How cool is that?
It's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, that's so cool, it's ridiculous. And you helped, did you help invent this?
Well, I invented it with help from my design partner, Sam Hovish.
And how long did it take to get it right?
It took us three years.
Wow.
I'm not sure. It's still going now. We still have some prototypes to work on.
We believe this is the first ever glitter cannon prosthetic. We're pretty sure about that. You can shoot a stream of sparkles. How high?
I don't think I've measured it yet, but pretty high.
I'm told 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 feet in the air.
Oh, we should get to that. I don't think I'm there, but I can try.
Yes, definitely try. And how's the Museum of Science and Industry tied to this?
So I got invited to be in a museum and have my prosthetic arm shown off in a museum exhibit called Wired to Wear. And, yeah.
So you're a star. I hate to break it to you, Jordan. You're a star.
So she's doing two cool things here. She's helping make the conversation about disabilities easier and put in a little fun to it. And then you're also one of the four founding members of the STEM squad. So these are girls doing awesome things in science, technology. So talk about that.
So the STEM squad, sorry, Mom.
the STEAM squad
is, you're okay. The STEAM squad is a group of girls, a bunch of STEAM girls, together in, this one group chat, and it's really cool, because we're all doing this really cool stuff, and we're talking on Twitter and all that, and it's just really cool to be meeting all these cool kids, and we have a website now. It's really cool.
What's the website?
I can tell it's the steamsquad.org.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's cool because it's like they have black and white like pencil drawings of themselves. It's almost like they're superheroes, and they work on projects and things, and girls doing really smart, cool things.
Yeah, STEAM is science, technology, engineering, art, and math, and the idea being all-inclusive, never let yourself be held back, chase your dreams, chase what you want to do. If you don't know what you want to do, get involved in everything. And to bring it back to you, Jordan, you and your mom wrote a book, Simon & Schuster. It's going to be out in bookstores and wherever you buy books, June 4th. It's called Born Just Right, which clearly you were, Jordan. You are a rock star.
Thank you.
Hey, Jordan, have you met Lauren Scruggs?
No.
Oh, she's a celebrity that lost an arm in a helicopter accident, and she does a lot of stuff with regular prosthetic to help people ensure their confidence and things like that. It's just another, I bet that they could join forces and be really strong in that. But Jordan's picture with her, people have to go to this
website cannon
and see the cannon arm, because it is the coolest. I bet people that don't need a prosthetic want a cannon arm.
Sure.
I mean, that's like the
Let's make them. Let's sell them. Yeah. And let's make a bunch of money for the cause.
Yeah.
By the way, Jordan, we have somebody who works here named Chris Duffy, who was born without one of his arms. On top of the fact that he's hilarious and one of the greats in the country at what he does, he's never let it hold him back either. And he's old.
He's old.
So you got an amazing life ahead of you, along with the amazing life you've already had. And we're proud of you.
Thank you.
All right, Jordan. Thanks for coming on. You know you're the most valuable person on the planet.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure. You unicorn glitter cannon, you. All right, hold on a second. How cool would it be if I could get that for Abigail? Come on.
Yeah, she would. It's purple. I mean, it is like the coolest. This girl is amazing. She is going to be a rock star. The girls she is joined up with are all aspiring engineers, which we need women.
Now, they're going to have to turn this into a toy, because obviously the prosthetic is for people that are missing an arm.
Yeah.
And I don't want to cheapen that, because the experience is a cool thing.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I don't want one.
Yeah. Everyone wants to be a unicorn shooting out glitter. So
very cool. That's a great kid. And obviously a great mom as well.
Doesn't it make you feel so good about young people that are going to be in charge of us soon?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Well, Dave, you and I are probably 2 weeks away from being put in a home.
I would say a little more than that, hopefully.
Okay. When it happens, though, Jordan and all the other littles will be out there taking care of us.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and our main
I'm
job.
I'm grateful for that.
Our main job will be, and what time is the soup coming?
Yes, and make sure it's hot.
At 7:31, your headlines are straight ahead on 720 WGN. Phone calls, texters, 312-981-7200. Follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show, Steve Cochran Show on Facebook and Instagram, and so it goes. Texter writes, my class read an article about Jordan, and they were so inspired by her. It's great that she is working with the Museum of Science and Industry, and I'm going to play her interview for my students later. And that interview will be posted shortly, right? All right. So you can, of course, get pieces of the show all the time. And pull them off the internet and exploit them for your own personal gain. Isn't life great? Especially if you're a teacher with students, please take all you want.
Are you concerned about the supporters of the Special Olympics that are upset with the decision to remove their funding? Is there any other part of the budget, Madam Secretary, that you feel Democrats are incorrectly describing or presenting? I know you mentioned that you thought this was a political issue today during your hearing. Can you explain that more?
Oh, thank God the elevator's here.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
That's our friend Ryan, and Ryan Nobles was, you know, doing his job. And he encountered Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, the other day as she was getting on a notoriously slow elevator, asked her questions, and as Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us. Now, Ryan, apparently she lost the ability to hear.
You know, Steve, I've only watched the video of that. I've not actually just listened to it. And I think it's even more awkward just listening to it because you can hear the ambient noise. You can kind of feel the tension. You fill that in with your imagination. I relived that moment all over again. I honestly ran out of questions as we waited for that elevator. I was there for 2.5 minutes peppering the secretary. And I'm pretty sure she could hear me because she glared at our cameraman, Taka Yokomura, pretty intently. So she knew the situation that she was in, but she just chose not to talk to us.
You were a total professional. You could have done what I would have done in that case. Went, hello, can you hear me? And by the way, the funding, of course, was put back in. And Betsy DeVos said it wasn't my idea to begin with. The president got this huge news last weekend that the summary of the Mueller report was that he could not be accused of collusion, and there was not enough to go on to do the same with anybody in his administration. Obviously, if you have the ability to hear, read, or listen, and you've paid attention over the last 2 years, you're going, I'm sorry, what? So when the full report comes out, we'll see what we see that's not redacted. Until that happens, the president not only has not celebrated his win, he's dug a hole even deeper with his health care thing. And it's just hard to fathom. I don't know. You know, again, people go, well, his strategy is, there's no strategy. It's get up, open mouth.
Well, and there's a little bit of news about that this morning. As a matter of fact, Steve, Manu Raju and Jeremy Erb, my colleagues that are covering the Democratic investigations on Capitol Hill, are reporting this morning that Jerry Nadler, who's the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, is actually going to take the step of issuing a subpoena for his committee to see the entire Mueller report. So, you know, what that indicates is that if they feel like it's necessary to take this step or at least put in place the framework to take that step, that would mean that they're uncomfortable with the idea that they think that the Attorney General William Barr is going to provide them all the information that they're looking for. So you've got the president on one side essentially taking a victory lap when all we know about this report is the four pages that were written by his hand-picked attorney general. And now you've got Democrats increasingly appearing that they're not just going to accept what that initial readout told them about the report. You know, this idea that somehow we're just going to move on to the next chapter in this conversation, I think, appears to be a fantasy. That it may end up backfiring on Democrats as well. I'm not necessarily sure that this is the best strategy. But to your point, you're right. It just the president, I think, would be best served by just saying, okay, this is over. Now let's talk about, I don't know, infrastructure,
right,
or let's talk about, or let's actually issue a healthcare plan. That's not just say that we're going to be the party of healthcare. That doesn't appear to be the direction he's going in, and I assume we probably shouldn't be surprised about that.
Yeah, and let's be clear about this, too. Obamacare is significantly flawed, as we knew it would be. It's a huge bill. It's just colossally sized. It probably shouldn't have been shoved down people's throats when it was. We didn't get to keep our own doctors. All of those things. But guess what? Barack Obama's not the president anymore. So the Republicans have an opportunity for the last 10 years to, quote, repeal and replace. And 10 years later, there's still no plan.
And, you know, the other thing, too, Steve, is there's not really an appetite on Capitol Hill to come up with a plan. I mean, the scars from this last go-round where they tried to put through some sort of a replacement plan are still very much in place. You know, it's the last thing that Mitch McConnell wants to talk about. You know, when you talk to the senators walking the halls on Capitol Hill, where I was all last week, they have no comment on it. They don't know what the president's talking about. This is basically him just shooting from the hip, claiming that he wants to take on health care, without any kind of real substance behind his effort. So you're going to see, you know, senators like Bill Cassidy from Louisiana and Lindsey Graham will talk about it, but this is not a priority for Mitch McConnell. He does not want to fight this battle. Yes, health care is a problem. I think it becomes an increasingly bigger problem for Republicans as we move into the next election cycle because this is the number one priority of Democratic voters. It's something that encourages and makes them enthusiastic in their energy to go out and support. So I think that's why I think the president's people are telling him that he needs to get out in front of health care because it is such an important issue for Democrats. But it's not something that President Trump's fellow Republicans want to deal with at all. They much prefer to push it to the back burner.
Al Sharpton was in town this weekend, the, quote, Reverend Al Sharpton. And he was at Rainbow Push. And he, after a couple of weeks ago, saying Jussie Smollett should be fully accountable if he, in fact, made this whole thing a hoax, decided to take a different tack this weekend and accuse the mayor, and more importantly, the police superintendent, who will be on with us next hour, Eddie Johnson, slamming Kim Fox just because she's a powerful black woman. Based on everything from the Crown Heights affair to everything else Al Sharpton's done in his career, I have no idea why MSNBC continues to give him a platform. But secondarily, Eddie Johnson in particular has said nothing but the right thing here. And Eddie Johnson, who is a black man, said, I am absolutely appalled that another black man would use a symbol, a horrific symbol like a noose, to fake a crime. So maybe Sharpton could read, do a little homework. I don't know what you're hearing about this.
Well, it's not just, media networks that give Al Sharpton a large platform. Many of the 2020 candidates have, made their way to his offices to essentially, meet with him and seek out his endorsement. And then this week he's holding his big conference that he holds every year in New York called the National Action Network Conference, which is basically his outfit. And I think at least five or six of the 2020 candidates are going to be speaking at this conference because it's a huge platform to reach out to the African-American community. I know Bernie Sanders is a candidate that I'm following who has an issue. Has had a hard time reaching out to the black community. Is going to be among those speakers. So you're talking about somebody with a pretty powerful voice here whose, signals people can take about, how to deal with this particular issue. And the other thing I'd point out, Steve, is that this is, one of these kind of flashpoint culture war moments where, there are people on, maybe the far left that could use that to their advantage, but there's certainly people on the far right using it to their advantage. I mean, President Trump can't go, a moment in front of cameras without somehow talking about Jesse Smollett. And the same thing can be said for some of these firebrand conservative talk show hosts. And watching it all play out, and I don't know the ins and outs of the investigation, or Ryan Young, who's based there in Chicago, has done a great job covering it. It just seems everybody needs to take kind of a deep breath here and take a step back and say, how do we handle this situation moving forward? Because I think it could set the stage for how incidents like this are dealt with in the future. Because if I'm somebody who this happened to, if you're a victim in a situation like this, how nervous are you to come forward and tell your story? Wouldn't you be concerned that people are going to look at you with a skeptical eye because of what happened with this major star? It just seems that on so many different fronts that this whole thing is an even bigger mess than we realize.
Yeah, well, it's true, but I don't know any part of this story living here where the police department screwed this up. And the idea that Kim Fox is in trouble because she's a powerful black woman is a ridiculous statement to make. Now, the other thing I want to ask you before... go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Move on.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, the other thing I was going to ask before we run out of time is the candidates reported the money collected, and South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, $7 million. Did anybody see that coming?
Well, we had an idea that it was coming because he told everybody last night that he was going to put his numbers out first thing this morning, which a lot of candidates don't do that. They kind of take a deep breath and count all the money before they announce it, and he wants to get out ahead. I mean, there's no question that we knew there was a degree of momentum behind his campaign that we're not seeing with a lot of the other campaigns. $7 million is a pretty impressive haul for somebody that has a very kind of makeshift campaign operation, doesn't have a ton of staffers, hasn't really been out as much as some of the other people have, and just a lot of people didn't know who he was even a month ago. So that is a huge statement. $7 million, the reason he wants to get that number out ahead of time is because once some of these other big guys come through, that number's actually going to look pretty small. My guess is that Bernie Sanders is going to report somewhere in the range of 18 to 21 million. So that makes 7 million look like a much smaller haul. I bet you Beto O'Rourke is somewhere in the 15 to 16 million dollar range. So there's going to be big, big numbers that come in over the next couple of days. But there is no doubt, Steve, that we need to start paying much closer attention to Pete Buttigieg because he's riding that kind of campaign arc, this kind of slow trajectory where all of a sudden we're going to wake up in Iowa a year from now, and this guy may end up in a second or third place showing, and all of a sudden everybody's figuring about what the next step could be for him.
He's really impressive, from the CNN town hall, which kind of blew up his numbers here, and I think certainly helped his $7 million haul to all of it. Just very impressive.
I think the big thing for him is that he's lived up to the hype. Every time people hear a thing about him, and then you hear about him, and then you see him for the first time, and you're like, wow, he is as impressive as I thought. And I think that's part of what's fueling his momentum.
We let you go here, I'll leave you on hold for a second so you can hear, in case you missed it, Chris Rock talking about Jesse Smollett this weekend. And Ryan, thank you for coming on.
All right, have a great week, guys.
Thanks, buddy. 7:52, here's Rock.
They said no Jesse Smollett jokes. Yeah, I know. What a waste of light skin, You know what I could do with that light skin? That curly hair my career would be out of here, running Hollywood. Yes, no, just did. What the hell was he thinking? From now on, I ain't never gonna know just, you're Jesse from now on. You don't even get the you no more. That you was respect. You ain't getting no respect from me. Okay.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, 757. Coming up, it's Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, Dean Richards, as we do an abbreviated edition today. At least we think it's going to be abbreviated, of Moron Entertainment. And then Jeff Garland live in studio on the way as well.
What an hour on the Steve Cochran Show.
Very busy.
Man, I don't know who books this show.
Very busy.
Can we take off our pants when he arrives?
That's what Jeff would like.
Yeah.
Jeff's much more comfortable in a no-pants world.
I thought he meant when Eddie Johnson was here for a search.
Two birds. Yeah. 7:58, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Steve will be next.
If he wanted to clear his name, the way to do that was in a court of law so that everyone could see the evidence. You all know what the bond prophet said. You know, we all know what it said. So, you know, I stand by the facts of what we produce. If they want to dispute those facts, then the place to do that is in court, not secret.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And we continue at 8:11. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson's here. You just heard him speaking there. And obviously, I want to talk about the Jussie Smollett thing. I appreciate you taking some time after TV to jump over here. But first off, nice to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a beautiful day in Chicago.
Yes, it is.
And you got some good news last week. How many new cops?
So we graduated almost 300 last week, and now we have another additional 100 coming on today.
That's great.
Today. Yep.
All right, so we got a new mayor coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need more.
Well, you know what? Ideally, if I could get it up to about 600, 700 more, I'd really be happy.
Yeah, because you got to have the right amount of bodies on the street to do the coverage that's needed.
Absolutely.
I was at an event this weekend. I was talking about with other people, and look, you know this. Everybody knows this. Every field has bad folks in it.
Yeah.
But every field has a small percentage of bad folks in it. The worst thing you can do is paint the entire chosen profession as being bad.
Exactly.
And 99.9% of cops are out there doing the right thing.
Yep.
And the 0.1% are the ones that get talked about.
Exactly. You know, like I said, you know, the majority of cops are out there trying to do the right thing. Do we have some bad actors? Of course we do. We're not unlike any other profession. But, you know, the majority are out there doing the right thing. And our job is to identify the bad actors and hold them accountable.
And a lot of that's got to come from the rank and file. And I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think cops are better than ever at doing self-reporting.
Yeah, you know, we put a lot of mechanisms in place so that they can do it now without fear of repercussions,
right,
or being called stool pigeons and things of that nature. Because the simple fact is this, Steve. If we have one, two bad cops out there acting badly, then it makes the entire department look bad.
Yep.
So the majority of cops don't like that. So they will report incidents. But for those who don't, then we have a mechanism for them, too.
So we get to this Jussie Smollett thing. It just won't go away, which, you know, I'm sure is a thrilling development for you. But this weekend, the Reverend Al Sharpton comes to town. He's over at Rainbow Push. And he said that you and the mayor are coming down on Kim Fox because you don't like powerful black women.
That's absolutely a falsehood. Listen, I've never said anything derogatory towards Kim Fox. Kim Fox and I have a great relationship. We know we are partner in the crime fight in the city of Chicago, and that's not going to change.
Right. As long as she's in that office, it's a partner you've got to work with.
Absolutely. And we talk quite often about different cases, so it's nothing unusual for us to talk, and I would never point the finger at her. You know, her job is to prosecute. I don't question the way that she does that. You know, she makes the decisions that she makes based on what she has in front of her, and I respect that.
Yeah, and the mayor came out very strong about a whitewash in the office over there. He's got a lot of questions to answer and stuff. What you said last week is consistent with what you've said throughout. And that is, if this young man wanted to prove he's innocent of something that we know he's not, well, fight it in court.
Absolutely. You know, the process that he went through was a process designed for people that are guilty of low-level crimes. Okay? So he wasn't exonerated. He wasn't cleared. If he wants to proclaim his innocence, then the place to do that is in a court of law before a judge or a jury.
Well, and Kim Fox is not a solo operating thing. There's a team of people that help make decisions and contribute to, you know, she's not the only person.
Sure.
She gets the name because she's the one we know.
Yeah, right.
Buck stops there kind of thing. Would this have been different? I assume it would. But would this have been different if, not knowing the protocol, if Kim Fox or somebody in her office picks up the phone and says, look, we're about to make an announcement here about this case. You're not going to like it, but it's a decision we've made and we've got to do it. Just the professional courtesy of doing that. Would that have changed things at all?
Yeah, well, you know what? Usually that's the way it works, you know, but of course, I liken this to a marriage. You know, we both have the same goals, you know, but we don't always agree on it. And usually we do talk about things of that nature. But at the end of the day, like I said, you know, it doesn't always fall the way that I might want it to or different people might want it to. And, you know, you have to respect that process.
Way too often, good hard cop work is not rewarded. And a good lawyer, good in quotes, will get a bad guy out. In this case, Jussie Smollett has got some money, got himself some good lawyers. Whatever happened in between will eventually come out. But it doesn't diminish the fact that good hard cop work determined the facts on the case and made a decision, right?
That's correct. You know, I stand by that the investigation, it was done thoroughly. You know, the state's attorney's office was with us at every step of the way. You know, they ultimately approved the first felony charge against him. And then they went back to court, back to the grand jury, to get an additional 16 counts on the indictment. So the investigation was done as thoroughly as we could possibly do it. You know, if there are facts out there that dispute that, then, you know, I welcome to see those. But right now, the facts that we know it supports that the alleged crime was not what it was described.
Yeah, and the state's attorney's office doesn't dispute the fact that this was likely to be a guilty case. They just said this is the way we plan on dispensing of the case. And right. The way they handled it was, you know, at best clumsy and ham-handed, and that's what they need to answer to. But I just want to make sure people understand that the state's attorney's office wasn't saying to you, Jussie Smollett's innocent.
Correct, correct. And like you said, Steve, the way they handle it is the way that they handle it. I'm not going to question that. You know, we still have a great relationship with the state's attorney's office, and I don't see that change.
Yeah, I think I heard this weekend, you know, the unfortunate thing about cable news in particular and filling up 24 hours is you've got legitimate journalism and good reporting that gets mixed in with commentary. Mm-hmm. And it's hard sometimes for people to tell the difference. And I heard a lot of bad commentary this weekend that was completely without fact. And one of the things that came up is, and you've addressed this on the show, but I appreciate it if you talk about it again, that the city lost resources in covering other crimes because you had guys working on this case.
No, you know, it was reported as a hate crime. We give the same resources to anybody that reports a hate crime. We give the same resources. It wasn't taken away from any of the violent crime. We have a hate crimes unit that investigate these types of things. He wasn't given anything additional, so that's a falsehood. We give the same amount of resources, and, you know, our job is to find out whether the crime took place. And when we started this investigation, we were looking for the perpetrators of a hate crime, and it turned in a different direction. But there were no additional resources expended on it.
Is that one of the things you guys work on, report times on crimes and things like that? You know, like I call and I got a problem and how long it takes you to get to my house as opposed to whatever else is going on. Is that a statistic that you guys look at?
Yeah, we do look at our response time. And our response time right now is pretty good in terms of where it was a few years ago. And some of the reason that is the technology that we've invested into some of our challenging areas around the city. So we're getting better at that, but we certainly do look at how long it takes us to respond.
What difference would new headquarters make?
A new headquarters? Well, a new training facility.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, let me clarify something. It's not a cop academy. It's a public safety academy so that the police, firefighters, paramedics, EMTs can all train together. Because the world that we live in now, terrorism is a real threat. And
sure.
It's important that all your agencies are able to train together. So that makes a big difference in terms of us being 21st century policing as opposed to how we were in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s up until now. So I think it's important that we invest those resources, because if we want the police department to be the best it can be, then you have to invest in it.
Sure.
The estimate that was put out of asking Smollett to reimburse the police department for the cost, do you do a cost estimate on every case that you do, or just when you're trying to seek reimbursement?
Yeah, when we're trying to seek reimbursement. And I would just point to people that they think that this is an anomaly. You know, we had a case some months ago where a white couple claimed that they were robbed on Lower
Yep, I remember that.
Lakeshore Drive. And we invested that case thoroughly, like we always do. And we found out that was a hoax. They pleaded guilty and ultimately reimbursed the city for the cost that it took us to investigate it. So that's nothing unusual.
Should it be a stiffer penalty this is just an opinion question, for false reporting?
Well, you know, I think when people falsely report, they do divert resources because we could be investigating a real crime. So I think that restitution is, I think that that's a legitimate ask.
Right. And the crime in the books is, again, it's not a misdemeanor. I don't even know what the classification is. But in all likelihood, if you don't have priors, you're not going to jail for that. Should people go to jail for it?
Well, you know what? I think they should be held accountable. You know, now it's up to the system to figure out what accountability actually means. But we do have to send a message not to do that. So it, the consequence has to be such that it prevents them from doing it in the future.
I'll let you go on this because part of your job ends up being in the umbrella of politics, whether you want it to or not. And I know you don't. But we've got a mayor's race tomorrow by tomorrow night, in all likelihood, certainly by Wednesday morning. We'll know who the new mayor is. As I understand it, you didn't want the job in the beginning and sort of had to be talked into it. But since you had the job, I have a sense that you've grown to like it and feel good about what you've been doing in it. Do you want to keep it?
Yeah, I think that we've made significant progress in the last few years. You know, right now, when I took the seat in 2016, we were in the throes of a very violent year in 2016. Since we implemented our strategies in 2017, we've cut the gun violence in this city by 50%. You know, now that's not cause for celebration, but of course, it's room for encouragement and we're moving in the right direction. So I think that I just want to see things fundamentally change so that the police department can continue on this course that we're going in now. And I tell you, I love this city. I love this police department. And I just want, before I leave, I really would like to see the police department liked in all parts of the city, not just a segment. But I'd like to see the South and the West sides be able to say, you know what, we don't always agree with our police department, but we think they're doing the right thing.
And if I talked to some of the guys you came up with, would they say you've changed?
No, I don't think they would. I'm the same person that I was when I stepped in the Academy of 2nd of May in 1988.
Right. Be careful what you ask for, right?
Yeah.
In your case, you didn't ask for it.
That's right. I did not.
Listen, I hope it's you because I like what you're doing for the city. And we'll see where this goes tomorrow night and Wednesday. But thanks for the work, as always. Thanks for the work you and the men and women that work for you are doing.
And thank you all for having me in here today.
Appreciate it. That's Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
Let's go live to Channel 9 now. Tough act to follow. You're following the police superintendent.
This may be the transition of the century. Police superintendent to morons.
It's more an entertainment. Did you have a nice birthday?
I did have a nice birthday.
What'd you end up eating for dinner?
I had a prime rib yesterday.
For dinner. Did you go somewhere?
I did. I went to a very famous restaurant that I don't want to mention.
Does it rhyme with Lowry's?
No.
Oh. Did you have horseradish?
I love horseradish.
You know, horseradish is 90% horse.
That's why I love it.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not satisfied till I'm picking hoof out of my teeth.
Right. Please. And yesterday on your show, I heard you talking about a Greek joint that you love now, too.
Oh, that was Saturday night with some friends. We went to Psistadia.
Oh, that's where I run into Dean.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. On Tui, just east of the Edens, it's my favorite Greek restaurant.
So, Dean, we get takeout from there a lot. That's when I've seen you, when I'm picking it up. And we try to order takeout on Thursday, and they said, nope. No can do. We're too busy.
Sorry, we're too busy.
I was like, I've never heard of restaurants saying
that. Wait, they said they can't do takeout?
Yeah, they said we can't. They must have. I mean, they're busy, and they do a ton of catering, too, so it's like...
I've eaten out every meal of my life for the last 30 years. I've never heard that.
Yeah. You don't understand how busy this place can be.
Yeah, I mean, it is busy, so...
But you don't have time to make takeout?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he told Pat to call back in an hour and a half, and it was
Call back in a half an hour.
That's hilarious.
Very busy right now.
But that's a good problem. That's a good problem to have.
My head almost caught on fire about five times while we were having dinner from all the flaming cheese around. If I had hair, it would have caught on fire.
Well, can you imagine a head my size in a crowded restaurant?
Right?
I'm a real danger.
Right? No, it was very nice dinners both nights. Very nice. Thank you very much. So many nice messages, including from my friend Steve, who texted me.
I gave him the three gifts of the Magi.
He gave me the three gifts of the Magi. Number one, a Pierce Brosnan singing telegram.
And why is that important to you?
Because I hated him so much in Mamma Mia, the first Mamma Mia movie. Number two, a Mel Gibson autographed 8x10 that says, Happy Birthday, A-hole.
You know how hard that was to get? It's unbelievable.
It's more difficult now because we've made up and we're friends now.
Right, so. But he was in the middle of an I Hate Jews meeting. I had to get him out of that.
And third, Steve got me a weekend in the Dells with Tom Skilling and Billy Joel.
Yep.
Yeah, very nice.
Because the three of you walking around the Dells would be nothing but
people
fun.
Would be confused.
Is that three Skillings? Is that three Billy Joels? Is that three Dean Richards? As a matter of fact, you guys should be appearing at Lollapalooza this summer, the three of you.
the three guys, the three bald guys.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, I'm glad you had a good birthday. We just played the Chris Rock sound slamming Jesse Smollett at the NAACP Image Awards. Is Rock on tour again? Because, man, he's still funny.
He's not, but, man, if you want to see a master class in stand-up comedy and genius and... the minute that I heard that they told him, don't talk about Jussie Smollett, right. Right. Number one, I knew he was going to do it when I heard that they told him not to. Number two, I thought, that's just like Steve.
It's exactly that's right.
Tell Steve don't talk about something and watch how fast it gets on the air.
Yeah. This morning before the show, Super Joe was pulling that audio, and then he did a Google search, and I heard him say, oh, 54. He looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does look, he's not aging.
Does look good.
Yeah.
Well, take a look at me. Black don't
cry. I know, that's what... That we went right just like Steve.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There was a rapper killed this weekend?
Yeah. His name, his stage name is Nipsey Hussle. And he is a Grammy-nominated rapper. He owned some clothing stores in the Los Angeles area, and he was at a store when...
the middle of the day, right?
Middle of the day, middle of the afternoon yesterday. Some guys came in, start shooting the place up. Three people were shot. He was killed. The other people are expected to survive. But this young rapper started off selling tapes. You know, his music, he started selling tapes out of his car. And this was just a really a rags-to-riches story. And it's a terrible story. He's only 33 years old.
And do we know if he was the target?
They say that they believe that it was a retaliatory gang hit. Because he was a gang member. When he was a teenager, he was a gang member.
Yeah, that's awful. Rolling Stones tour has been postponed because a 75-year-old man is sick. This doesn't seem like breaking news to me.
It is breaking news. It's not just any 75-year-old
man. Oh, who is it?
It's Mick Jagger.
Oh, well, that is different.
It's Mick Jagger. It's Superman. He could do anything. I mean, have you seen him on, you know, performing in the last several years?
He jumps around like a 55-year-old man who's in really good shape.
Every bit as spry. If anything, I would have thought the way he moves his hip, he might accidentally smack somebody on the head. And they would have to go to the hospital.
Right.
But not him. They did not disclose what the nature of the illness is, but Mick tweeted out his apologies for all of this, that he hopes to be back on stage again soon. So hopefully it's nothing too serious and he'll be back on the road. But if you had tickets for the Soldier Field shows, June 21st or 25th, they're telling people to hold on to your tickets. When they do reschedule the dates, the tickets will be good for that. Or you can make the decision at that time if you want to get your money back.
Well, look, we know a couple things it's not. Even with all that jumping around, we know it's not a groin pull because at 75, you'd just be hoping to have one. we probably would have thought, as we always do whenever there's health concerns with the Stones, that Keith Richards would have been the guy. But Ron Wood left because he was old. Charlie Watts keeps threatening to leave because he's old. Mick Jagger's hurt. Keith Richards, who looked like he died around 77, 78, is still just going along.
He's going to outlive, you know, what they say, that when the atomic bomb hits, the only ones that will survive are cockroaches and Keith Richards.
It seems right. Yeah, absolutely seems right.
And he still moves, too, around this date.
Yeah, usually with a cigarette dangling out of his mouth.
That's good living right there.
Mark Hamill, what's up with him?
He is going to be the voice of Chucky. They're going to be remaking Child's Play, the scary
movie.
No
way.
Yeah.
Mark Hamill?
Mark Hamill is going to be the voice of the, you know, the scary doll. Of Chucky.
Isn't that bizarre casting?
Himself, yeah. Well, Mark Hamill, besides Luke Skywalker, does lots of animated voices for animations. He's done Batman cartoons and a lot of video games. So it just seems like, you know, he's the ultimate good guy in Star Wars and is the ultimate bad guy now playing Chucky in the new Child's Play.
Oh, it's making me scared just thinking about it. That movie freaks me out.
Yeah. Do you know the original Chucky? Here's what freaked me out. When I looked it up this morning, the original Chucky came out 30 years ago.
Shut up.
Can you believe it?
That makes me 30. Yeah, that's when I watched
30
it.
30 years ago.
That's when I used to get enjoyed scaring myself when I was 13, you know, like, that was fun to make yourself so scared that you weren't going to be able to sleep.
I never like being scared. I don't know what it is. I get that the biggest genre now is horror films. And it's just not my thing.
I had to get my Cabbage Patch dolls out of my room after that movie because I was convinced any doll was about to.
They were all looking at you.
Murder me.
Yeah. I remembered Psycho. I didn't take a shower from like the late 60s till 3 weeks ago.
Psycho terrified me when I was a kid. And I think I told you this story because remember a few weeks ago I was at the first movie theater where I ever saw a movie that they're restoring, the Avalon Regal Theater on 79th Street on the south side. And I would go with my brothers. I'm the youngest of four boys. My brothers would begrudgingly have to take me along. Take Dean. I don't want to take Dean. I don't want to take Dean. So Dean would have, you know, they would take me, and then the second we got to the theater, they would lose me in the dark theater, and I would sit all by myself, and most often watching scary movies. And I remember once with a Vincent Price movie, I don't remember which one it was, but I remember it was a Vincent Price movie. I'm all by myself. I can't be more than 8 years old, sitting there screaming at the top of my lungs, and I ran out to the lobby and sat in the lobby all by myself until the movie was
over. Rocked back and forth.
And my brothers came out. And that's why I am the way I am today.
That's why you got into show business.
Right.
That movie was so scary to me, I went down to the basement and got my mom out of the chair. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Jeff Garland's coming in. I know he just did TV.
He's just here, yeah. He's,
did he have his pants on?
He did keep his pants on this time. Yeah, that's nice. A phrase that will set him off laughing is if you tell him that that he's higher than a kite.
Really?
We had a clip of him on opening day, and he was just acting goofy. And Mike Toomey said to him that you are higher than a kite, and he burst out laughing. And we played that clip this morning, and he burst out laughing again.
Well, he's got that subtle laugh, that subtle under laugh.
Right,
that,
right. Very, really very soft-spoken.
Well, that'll be good to see Jeff.
The Jeff Garland. Super nice guy.
He's
going to be doing a Netflix special at the Park West soon.
Mostly reading poetry, I assume?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a new cerebral kind of.
Yeah, that's kind of thing. Thank you, buddy.
See ya.
Jeff Garland is standing by in the PPG Paints Green Room. He's going to be on with us right after those 8:30 headlines coming up.
I'm actually at a point now at my age that I think that I'm more comfortable being bottomless than topless.
Right. So you like having a shirt, underwear.
Yeah.
What happens? You're around the house, okay?
Yeah.
Doorbell rings. It's the guy to install the cable or whatever, and there are no pants around.
Oh,
pants stashed?
It's the guy for the cable?
Yeah.
I'm in my underwear.
You don't put on pants for that guy.
No, not the guy for the cable.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hot pants. Hey, hot pants. Hot pants. Smoking.
844, hot Steve Cochran Show, and here he is.
I should probably come in for this.
And that bourbon, that. Take your pants up on.
I think I should probably come in for this segment of the show.
Probably.
Whenever.
If not, you can keep James Brown grooving.
Right? How great is this?
Hot pants.
You know, in honor of Murray Goldberg, we've all removed our pants for this segment. So,
that's except kind of I would have I wished you had worn underwear. I appreciate removing your pants, but underwear.
Nobody said underpants.
Well, I wish they had.
Why is underpants still the funniest word?
It's a funny word. Pants, right? Pants is funny.
Underpants is always funny.
Yeah, underpants.
Did you have the tidy whities when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, yes. Yes, I did wear the tidy whities when I was a kid. But I no longer wear them except professionally.
Yes, of course. Do you have a tidy whitey wrangler? You know, in Hollywood, there's specialty jobs for everybody.
That's my dresser, and when I walk into my trailer, that's when I realize I have to wear them. They're laid out for me. And they have different levels of wiener protection, so no one in TV land is offended by my...
I love that there's a meeting that goes on at ABC that decides how much protection there needs to be.
Hold on. Not just a meeting, but they've had numerous meetings early on in the run, which led to the where we're at, which is perfect, which looks like I'm a Ken doll with some sort of nothing.
Yeah, no package whatsoever.
Yeah, it's a
nothing
weird,
being delivered.
It's a weird thing, and there's all these layers. It's just so,
sounds super comfortable.
It is, actually.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, and some days I spend my entire day sitting in a chair wearing that, and I think, how did I get this job? This is awesome.
All right, now, you and I have known each other a long time.
Yes, we have. I'll be honest.
You go home.
Yeah.
You sometimes keep the comfortable tidy whities on?
No, I take them off. I don't like the tidy whities.
Is it a show business perk where you get to keep the tidy whities?
By the way, my regular underwear is more comfortable.
I wear the Tommy Johns. Are you a Tommy John man?
What's a Tommy John?
Tommy John, it makes
the pitcher for the White Sox and Yankees.
Yeah, not that guy.
And surgery.
Tommy John is a brand of underpants. It makes the most comfortable underwear a man could wear.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not partaking in the Tommy
Johns. Well, where are you picking yours up? Kohl's? Where are you buying your underpants?
You know what underwear I wear mostly is Lacoste.
Oh, sure.
Because I wore Lacoste clothes so much that I'm a Lacoste VIP and I get discounts.
I don't like having alligators that close to my important stuff.
By the way, real alligators couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
They don't want to be there either. Sewn on alligators, they're delightful.
Yeah.
Many different colors. They're boxer briefs. They're delightful.
I believe you are a victim now of your own success. Here's the thing about Jeff Garlin.
Victim?
Jeff Garlin's in Chicago all week. He's going to do the Netflix thing. He's a Cubs nut.
Yeah.
He's starting, by the way, the opener. All that stuff you've heard, complete nonsense. He's starting the opener on Thursday. Is it Thursday?
The home opener is Monday.
Yeah, that's my point.
Pirates.
That's my point, yeah. And along with the Goldberg, another season of Curb. You had all this movie stuff that was kind of cranking up. You don't have time to do a movie now.
The next movie I have coming out is Toy Story 4.
Well, when you sleep...
I don't.
Plus, you got kids. You see your kids. I mean, come on.
I do see my kids. I spend a lot of time with my kids. So, and I love napping.
And you actually look like you're getting more rest. What's up with you? Are there two Jeff Garlands?
I'm not saying anything.
He said he likes the nap. Do you happen to have a chair and a half? Because Steve just recently got a chair and a half.
This is another thing. Do you wear your Tommy Johns?
you've got to get the chair and a half.
What's the chair and a half?
The chair and a half is this giant, comfortable, overstuffed chair, but it's not just a chair. It's a chair and half of another chair. It's a chair and a half. Now, climbing in out of that bad boy... That takes some work. You got to have a skill. I'm kind of a tumbler. So you climb in.
You tumble in.
It is the nap maker. I'm telling you right now. I want this for you.
I'm able to nap on a wooden chair.
I get it, dude, but you need the chair and a half.
All right.
I get nothing for hyping it. I'm just telling you, it's the greatest thing since I don't know what.
I'm going to investigate because I like the name.
Yeah, the chair and a half.
Yeah.
I got your back.
Okay.
How are you? You're tired, aren't you?
Well, I just wrapped the Goldbergs and I just wrapped Curb 1 week after each other. So, season 10 of Curb and the Goldbergs, which is running now, season 6. And I've been doing stand-up because I'm prepping for a special that I'm filming here in town.
Where are you shooting it?
At Park West.
Oh, great. Perfect.
Yeah.
Last time I saw you do stand-up was at Park West.
Well, yeah, I Park West has a long history with me.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I have worked together many times.
Yes.
And at this point.
And we used to own a lotion shop together.
That's what I was referring to.
I thought you were referring to our comedy history.
No, mainly the
lotion shop.
I mean, that's fine, too, but I was talking about the history. So this will be at the Park West soon?
June 11th and 12th. Tickets are not on sale yet.
Okay. So you'll let us know when.
Yes.
And we'll get a big house in there, and we'll do a Netflix special. Now, Rock got $20 million for each one of his. How much are you getting?
Nowhere near that amount.
19.5?
No. No, they stopped paying those prices.
Is that right?
Well, I thought for
sure. Well, you're not doing it for $200.
Getting paid pretty well, but here's the thing. When they announced all those $15, $20 million ones, I thought, I'm worth a good three or four.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no.
They said no.
They're not doing them anymore.
How dare
they're not. They did it for a while, and they're not.
But this is a great place for comedians, because the thing about Comedy Central is Comedy Central is almost turning into MTV. Remember when MTV played videos?
Yeah.
You go on Comedy Central now, you got shows, you got stuff. Show me some comedy. So comedians are in there.
Yeah.
But Netflix has the best A-list comedy specials now.
They do. And they just live there forever.
Right.
On Netflix. It's pretty cool. So people will eventually see your show.
Anybody helping you write anymore? You just write all your stuff?
I write. When I create movies or TV shows, I usually like to collaborate.
But stand-up, you do it. It's hard to
stand-up,
have
stand-up, I do on my own. I have some people that, you know... I have no one who writes for me.
Yeah, comedians get together. They run premises by each other. They go, I got this. I don't know where to go with it.
But I do, now that I'm putting up a special, I do have a few people that are, you know, watching my set and giving me thoughts.
Yeah. Sure, Still one of the nicest guys in Hollywood, or have you turned into a total diva?
Me?
Yeah, people always say the nicest guy in Hollywood.
Well, that's very kind that they say that, and I appreciate that. I feel that most jerks... think they're nice guys. So I let other people decide if I'm a nice guy. So I cannot answer.
I'm here to tell you you're a nice guy.
Well, thank you. I aspire to be a gentleman and a nice man.
But you're due for a scandal. You're due for a big, overblown Hollywood scandal. I don't know how you have time to work that in.
No, I don't.
You really don't have time for a scandal. Don't you have a manager going, we can get you a scandal and give you a menu with like a choice of five?
There's scandal.
There's nothing there.
Well, by the way, I avoid everything. I don't even, you know, when I come out of a restaurant and TMZ's waiting, I don't even open my mouth and say, not tonight, or I don't say anything. They turn off the camera. I go, hi, fellas, how you doing?
Right.
Because I don't even want something that I might. Here's the thing. I know I improvise a lot on stage.
Yeah.
I know for sure I'm not going to say anything ignorant. I don't have any ignorant viewpoints. Mm-hmm. I know that about myself. Mm-hmm. But I will say something stupid.
That's kind of
ignorant and stupid are completely different.
And all it takes is a decent editor can take you out of context. Suddenly you got a problem.
Oh, yeah, it's just.
Are you on Twitter?
No. I went off that for that specific reason.
Yeah, because you're going to say something.
I saw this time coming very early on, and I had like 150,000 followers back, however many it was, seven years ago. Just deleted the account. I still have Instagram.
But that's healthy not to be on Twitter. It's healthy.
Very much so. There's people that I like a lot, friends of mine, who when something happens, they put their opinion on Twitter. And I think, is that really your ego?
Yeah.
You need to be out there. You got to have an opinion. To me, if I have any opinion on anything, I'll do it on stage.
Right.
Or I'll write about it in a movie. But I don't need to be spewing anything.
See, politics. I got 20 hours a week here. I got to shoot my mouth off a lot.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
And that's
you should hear the things
thing.
I say about you behind your back. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's fantastic.
How are you able to control yourself on the Instagram, though? Because it's the same thing.
Because first off, Instagram, you're putting out a picture. So to put out a picture for a big opinion is a lot of effort.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's true.
No. I have nothing. All I want to do is spread joy and help people deal with whatever they're dealing with.
The wackiest time you and I have ever seen. It's a wacky life we're living.
Yeah.
It's a crazy time in America. How old are the kids now?
They're 18, be 19 next month, and my 23-year-old had just turned 23 on the 23rd.
What's a 23 or 3-year-old doing?
He is a comedic. I have this big thing. He just worked on Curb as a production assistant.
Okay.
But I have a real strong opinion on this, and that is don't follow your dreams.
Oh, don't follow your dreams.
Don't. Unless your dream is what you're great at. Not good at, great at.
So don't fool yourself.
Right. Well, let's say you live in St. Louis.
Okay, I live in St. Louis.
And you love to sing.
I love to sing.
And you're a pretty good singer.
I'm not bad.
Yeah, okay? But you're great at money.
Mm-hmm.
I say go to school, become an accountant, and then with all the money you make from your successful accounting career, buy some recording time, record some songs, give it to your friends, let them tell you you made the right decision.
Well, you know, you don't need to give it to. I agree with 100%, by the way. But you know, you need to give it to. Every family has an uncle that shows up at the family dinners and at Christmas time, and he's this guy. You know, your parents are never going to tell you this, but you're a huge disappointment to this family. He's that guy. You need to give the recordings to that guy in your family and let him tell you what is really there, whether or not you're talented. Don't tell me you don't have that uncle. You have that uncle.
No. So this past weekend I was in for a wedding.
Okay.
I don't have that uncle. I really don't. Yes, I do have that uncle. I have to take that back. But point being, people say strange things to me. Here's the number one that's coming up now. I remember you when you were nutting.
That's nice.
I don't know what that means. Should I give them an award? And I was nutting. I'm still nothing, man. I'm just trying to get through the day.
Just having fun.
Yeah.
Just having fun.
Yeah.
I'll come back. More with Jeff Garlin in a second. Goldberg's,
more with me.
Goldberg's coming up. There's a huge murder at the end of this season that nobody saw coming, right?
But on the Goldbergs?
Yeah, the Goldbergs, yeah.
Don't
big cliffhanger.
That. Don't
do who that. Shot Murray?
Yeah, don't do that.
And Curb. Can't wait for when Curb rolls
that
out
comes
again.
Comes out, yeah.
What do you think? Fall or after?
I am not at liberty to say.
You have to kill me if you tell me.
No.
You don't know, right? Yeah, because you don't know what Larry wants to do.
I just can't say anything.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's tough because we're
but it's coming out.
Okay.
We just wrapped.
Good season?
My favorite we've ever done.
Come on.
Swear.
Wow, that's high standards.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And by the way, there would be, Jeff won't say this, but this is true. There would be no Curb if it weren't for Jeff Garland. Don't.
And I would not say that.
No, but that's absolutely true. Jeff Garland's here Thursday night, 7 and 9 at Zanies in Chicago, and then Friday night, 8 o'clock in Rosemont, Saturday, 7 and 9:30 in Rosemont, then back to Zanies on Wells on Sunday at 7. Plenty of chance for you to see Jeff.
Do you think it's manipulative if I play that song as I walk up to the stage?
Not at all. That should be your walk-on song.
Well, I did it once, and I felt stupid.
Why?
You know, I just felt kind of stupid.
Where'd the song come from? Who did it?
It was actually Larry heard it in a bank commercial.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he just bought the rights to it?
And his assistant, Laura, searched and found it. It was from a bank commercial.
It's the perfect song for the show.
In the 90s sometime, yeah.
Perfect song for the show.
Oh, it's magnificent.
Yeah, well, that should be your walk-up music.
Should it?
When you walk out on next Monday to start for the Cubs, that should be your walk-out
music. By the way, if I was starting for the Cubs, I'd need all the help I could
right,
get.
Come on.
So I would use that as a walk-up music.
Come on.
So the minute I throw my 70-mile-per-hour fastball and it misses the plate, I don't get booed too bad.
You ever gotten on a gun lately? You know, where you throw it to a pitching machine?
I wouldn't know.
Because here's the thing, a few years ago, you know, I thought, I still got it. And it's all in your legs. It's all muscles in your legs. That's the thing. Right. Everybody thinks it's your arm, throat. No. You got to have leg strength. You got to coordinate your body.
The whole thing.
I fired one off. I thought, that's 110 easy.
No, you didn't.
52 miles an hour.
52.
That was my heater.
And here I am thinking 70 I might throw. I doubt I'll even throw 70.
70 would be impressive.
I remember didn't warm up, and the Cubs asked me to throw the
ball. Oh, that stuff.
This is many years ago, and I didn't even reach home plate.
Oh, that's not
and
good.
This is the guy who played baseball.
You want to hop it?
Yeah. And so they booed me. And I'm like, why are you booing me? I'm one of you.
Right.
And then I said, can I have one more? And I called the catcher in, and I threw like that sissy kind of throw.
Like the ephus.
Yeah.
Nicely done. How many times have you done the stretch?
I think I'm 9-1.
Yeah, I bet.
And you know,
that's a good number.
I never buy into, like, I can't go to the game because they lose or whatever. And I just am thrown by. We lost, I remember, to the Tigers when one time I threw it out. I mean, I sang. And I got in a lot of trouble because that's the only time in history that they did the wave at Wrigley. There were more Tiger fans than Cub fans.
Ooh.
It was bad.
And you say something about all the Tiger fans?
I said Tiger fans suck. And I, by the way, which is ironic because I don't hate the Tigers.
No.
How do you hate the Tigers?
No.
But I was just so upset. I was so upset that the wave happened. It was wrong.
Yeah, and 9-1's a good number. You know, I've never thought about that. From going back to McDonough and Blunk through these guys now, we should have the celebrity win-loss records of people that have done it more than once.
Yeah, I'm up there.
By the way, I'm 2-0.
See?
Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah, I won't be invited back anytime soon, but I'm 2-0.
What happened last time?
Well, no, the Cubs are on a different station now after 90 years. But we have the White Sox now, your favorite team.
I like the White Sox.
I know you do.
I'm one of the, you know, there's a number of us in Chicago who are Cub fans who are pro White Sox. You won't find many,
but
you won't find many people who love the White Sox and go, oh, I root for the Cubs. It doesn't go back
that
way.
It's a good point. It doesn't work in reverse.
Go back.
It's a very good point.
By the way, I just bought, and this is 100% true, from a family that's had it like 70 years. I bought Bears season tickets, 50-yard line.
That's good timing.
I'm flying in.
Perfect
timing. I'm flying in for games. I won't go like, you know, the January game for sure I'm skipping.
The last game of the year when it's 40 below.
Yeah.
But that's perfect timing.
Yeah.
Because they got the potential to be very good.
Oh, my God, yes.
Thank God you and I lived long enough to see them be better than the Packers.
Oh, yes. By the way.
Again.
Again, right. I was at the game where we beat the Packers and clinched the division. That was a great game. Sat in my seats, and it was very exciting.
You got to test run your seats before
you started? I test ran my seats.
Great as
that. When I say they're on the 50, they're on the 50. And I think they're 6 rows up. They might be 9 rows up.
It's tremendous.
On the aisle. On the aisle.
Oh, yeah, no idea.
Gentlemen.
You get to a certain age, the aisle is so important.
Oh, yeah. So I'm a big ball of aisle.
It's a gift.
And
by the way, you look great.
Thank you.
You down some.
I'm down some.
Yeah, you look great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable. I'm just telling you,
I'm comfortable. I'm happy.
Well, you've been on my lap for this entire interview. So,
I have. Yeah. And you're naked from the waist down. So
not
it's
anymore.
Really, it's
I felt disturbing. Bad. During the break, I put tidy whities on.
Oh, good. Yes, you are. Yes.
Jeff Garland, 7 and 9. Zanies in Chicago Thursday night. Rosemont Friday night.
Yeah, parking in Rosemont is so much easier than being downtown.
But the thing about
except
the garage.
Except for you and I, because we can't do the garage.
The garage in Rosemont was designed by a drunk, because there's places in that garage where you go around a corner and it's a dead end. How do you have a dead end in a parking garage? Like, you literally pull into a...
Can I just tell you something?
It's a cul-de-sac.
Have you ever heard anyone ever say, for any shopping entertainment area, man, that parking area is fantastic?
No, but
they designed
closer.
It beautifully.
Yeah, I'm getting
because there's a couple in L.A., I won't go. I'll Uber there if I have to go for
right.
any reason.
Right.
I will not drive. And L.A. is all about driving.
Sure, of course it is.
And I will not drive to these two places because I don't want to deal with parking.
Well, the Rosemont is, but there's a lot of parking.
There's a lot of
parking.
And
the spots are wide.
Right. And if you get
really
caught in the parking garage,
except when I'm performing there, the parking becomes very tight.
Because, yeah,
tight.
It's packed.
Tight.
Yeah.
You'd be out on 294. That's where the Valley guy is. And then Sunday, back downtown at 7 o'clock. Curb coming up at a date to be determined soon. Goldbergs are coming back. How many seasons, though?
Goldbergs, next season will be our seventh, but we're still on the air until sometime in May.
And until the killing.
Then reruns. Stop with the killing.
Oh, I thought that Murray.
No, because you know what? There's somebody who's going to hear that, who's going to believe it. And you know what? Screw him. Yeah, there's a murder at the end of the season.
And Murray is the number one suspect.
I'm the number one suspect, and I murder someone in my underwear.
Right. Right.
From my chair.
Right.
I don't even get up. I have a harpoon. And it's none of the immediate family, but yeah.
That's why the show's good. Yeah. Nobody's ever seen a harpoon.
By the way, I just want to say, here I am in your new digs.
Isn't it great?
I used to be. It's not doesn't compare to Lake to Michigan Avenue.
Well, it's different. I mean, different. Look at the view.
By the way, it's delightful. Yeah. So I don't want to say that. It's delightful. But I want to say, I don't know why you have the prices right on one of the monitors here in the room.
I'm playing online.
You have the WGN the broadcast thing,
CLT, right? Well, CLTV carries the show.
Okay, so CLTV
and then
WGN Channel 9.
And then we've got Channel 2, which currently is showing
The Price is Right. And I don't get it.
I don't know either.
Oh, then they turned it off.
Yeah, now.
Was that commercial? Or? Oh, you're changing the channel.
Yeah, what channel would you like to see, Jeff?
Shocking.
I don't care. Leave that.
Well, when we run out of...
I don't know what
What did you say, Jeff?
Oh, Dora the Explorer. One of those. Yes. Play PBS children's shows.
Yeah, Dora the Explorer.
Because I think that's really relaxing to have that in the background.
I watch Elmo all the time. You know, I'm a grandfather now.
Are you really?
Yeah, with the second one on the way. And this little 3.5-year-old girl, Abigail, is the greatest thing ever. And we watch PBS kids shows all the time.
By the way, it's so much fun.
She explains them to me.
That's what you want.
Yeah, that's a
By the way, you just want her to talk to you.
Oh,
and just be with grandpa.
And you know what she calls me?
What?
Pops, because I'm a black entertainer, as you know. I'm Pops.
And your last name is Staples.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
One of the greatest Chicago performers ever.
That's so great.
Staples.
So great having somebody who gets the references. You know, sometimes Sandberg will look at me like, I wasn't even born then.
But Pop Staples, the music lives on.
Well, of course it does.
My God, does it live on.
I go see my friend Jeff Garland and see him on TV and consume him in the films. And boy, that Netflix special is going to be fun. So you got to come on when the tickets
are. It's actually going to be very different from other Netflix specials. It's not me just on stage. It's a whole experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like fireworks and stuff?
No, people have to dress like they're going to a wedding.
Okay.
But it just means dress nice.
All
right. It's not like you're in the wedding party.
Okay.
But just dress. You have to dress nice.
I'm not judging.
Tickets aren't on sale yet, but it's going to be really interesting.
All right. You'll call the show then when you go on sale?
Most certainly.
You'll be up trying to pee anyway, so why not?
Why not?
Yeah. Great to see you, buddy.
By the way, always an honor to be here. And you are a fantastic broadcaster.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
No, you're as good as they come, my friend.
Thank you.
That's why I'm here.
Well, and because we're pals.
Yes, but...
So, but you don't just really, do any chump show.
By the way, I have friends that have shows that I don't do.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I appreciate it.
That's true.
It's Jeff Garland. He's going to be in town all week. And if you see him, tell him that, you know, he wasn't a chump back in the old days. What did the guy say to you again?
Numerous people.
When you were
nutting? I remember you when you were nutting. That's what someone said to me at this wedding. I was at this past weekend.
So
I remember you when you were nutting. And they said, the way they said nutting, it was like they were paid. Like someone said, here's a dare. Go up to Jeff Garland. But when you say, don't say nothing.
Nutting.
I remember you when you were nutting.
And you were double T-I-N.
Yeah.
All right. And don't forget about the chair and a half.
By the way, how can a fella forget about it?
A chair and a half, I'm telling
and
you.
And what kind of underwear is it? Tommy John surgery underwear.
You don't want that down there. Yeah. That's the wrong place to get that surgery.
They get Tommy John.
All right, news in a second in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.
By the way, always an honor to be here. And you are a fantastic broadcaster.
Well, it's nice of you to say.
No, you're as good as they come, my friend.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Jeff looked good, didn't he? When's the last time you saw Garland?
In person? I want to say like 9 years ago. And he does look good now. I remember thinking I didn't think he looked that healthy when I saw him last
time. Yeah, he's down 20 or 30 pounds.
Yeah, he looked good. I think last time I saw him was in the showcase studio.
We took a photo, which will be posted any minute now if it's not up already. And I insisted it be the prom picture where I'm standing behind him and I'm hugging him. And you know, I had no problem getting my arms around him. So in the old days,
you're skinny too. So the two of you,
skinny's nice, but yeah, I probably lost more weight than he is. But I needed to. But you know, the arms around him, I wouldn't have been able to reach.
Yeah.
It's kind of creepy though that's my measuring stick, right? That I can go, wow, I can get my arms around Jeff.
Can we implement that with every guest that comes in? You try to put your arms around them, and then we'll gauge if they've lost weight or not.
I think some guests might take offense to that.
Joe Biden.
Yeah, exactly. The old Biden. At 9:21, Jim Peterik and Dennis DeYoung co-wrote a song that's out today. Jim Peterik and World Stage is this huge show that Peterik puts on every year. And to get two of the great Chicago musicians together to do a song is pretty cool. Peterik has written, you know, I don't know, a ton of hits. Did all the Survivor stuff, or a bunch of the Survivor stuff, and obviously Vehicle and all of Ides of March. And Dennis wrote 90% of the Styx hits and had a great solo career as well. So anyway, I've not heard the song yet. Super Joe, did you listen to it when I sent it to you last night, the Proof Heaven song?
Yeah, I listened to a good chunk of it. I didn't listen to it all the way through.
Well, we should play it, don't you think?
Absolutely.
All right, so we'll come back. We'll play that song for you. It's out today. And I'm sure you could get it from Peterik's website or Dennis as well. DennisDeYoung.com is a good website to go to all of them. And Dennis, I mentioned this last week, got to get Dennis back on the show, but I suppose I should, probably call him to invite him.
Yeah, I sent him a message that he didn't answer, but I'm sure he's really busy with the song, so.
So, you know, I was listening to Howard Stern the other day, and I don't hear Howard that often anymore, but Howard has done a song with Mark, what's his last name? The dude that did Uptown Funk, the producer.
Oh, Ronson?
Ronson, Mark Ronson. And Mark Ronson did a song with Howard Stern. And, you know, if Stern could do a song, why couldn't I do a song? Maybe an album.
Oh, a whole album.
Yeah, I think so. Why not?
Well, plus you're a black entertainer.
Yeah, pops.
So you've got that going for you.
Yeah, I got that going for
me. What kind of lyrics are you thinking?
Simple? Yeah.
Can we mix in the simple cough?
Yeah, the cough would be great right now. I always thought there should be a genre of music that's not about love. Like, you know, 90% of songs are about love.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a genre of music that's about, well, like you like getting new appliances.
Yes.
So like a song, you know, a song about new appliances.
There you go.
Or a song about, hey, how about that steak I had last night?
Just so you know, a song about appliances would be a song about love.
Ah, see, I'm right back in the problem here. Yeah. At 9:23, we'll come back, play that song for you in a second. This is 720 WGN. Texter says, I'm a limo driver, been waiting at Midway for Southwest 159 since 6:30. It was due in at 6:15. It's been sitting on the tarmac for 4 hours, and now it's been removed from the list of flights. My client watched the next flight from Columbus, Southwest 494, leave the gate and take off. That flight just arrived. It's very annoying, and delays like this affect limo businesses as well. All the small businesses, right? So,
sure.
Do they know what happened? Steve?
Yes. It was a piece of software that the airlines use to determine the weight of the aircraft that's used across the industry. Impacted Southwest, JetBlue, Alaska Airlines, American, United. It only lasted for about 40 minutes and then was quickly taken care of and was back up and running again. But those residual delays are going to be impacting a lot of people moving forward.
Not a terrorism hack of that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So Dennis DeYoung, and Jim Peterick get together, and you can go to iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you download music and see this song. The song is called Proof of Heaven, and we don't have time to play the whole thing here, but yeah, they're having a good time doing a song you can sing along to, and love them both. Here's a little bit of Proof of Heaven on 720 WGN and the Steve Cochran Show. So Jim Peterick's got a new album out, and Dennis's album is coming out soon, I believe, and it's on both. So there you go, Proof of Heaven. And check out the video, too. Again, get it wherever you download music. And Proof of Heaven, Dennis DeYoung and Jim Peterick, or as Dennis is now signing his correspondence, Dennis Gaga. He's not Lady Gaga, he's Dennis Gaga.
It's good.
It is good. Yeah, sing along, man. Sing along. Dave, you and I should do a duet.
Maybe for karaoke, if we ever do that again.
We are going to do it. Yeah, we're waiting on the musical director of the show to make sure that he's feeling right about it. Yeah. God, he's a diva, that DeCoste. It's 9:31, making 9:32, CLTV and 720 WGN. We'll come back with the headlines next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Love her. Squeeze her. Dave, you know who this is? That's right, the Carpenters.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
From their soulful period. All right, so I want to thank Superintendent Eddie Johnson and his contingent who is here. Tom Ahern's always a big help, too. Former hardworking ATF agent who is working with the CPD now. And I thought Eddie was really good. So that's up now, right?
It is up.
The podcast is up. You can hear that. You can hear Dr. Most from earlier this morning.
Jeff Garland, you could check him out, too.
But, Dave, there were three deputies?
Yes.
With, I mean, I obviously, the superintendent has a detail that is with him. But there were three deputies, I believe, and Tom is more of an administrative role now. And I probably shouldn't have said this. But as they were leaving, I said, hey, how you guys doing in your brackets? And they go, you know, you're in there. It's okay. I go, you know, we got a whole illegal gaming thing going out of our newsroom.
Yeah.
This
it was kind of a little awkward moment.
Ryan Burrow. So they went and they busted Burrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. They threw him down on the floor. They took him out in cuffs.
Yeah.
And frankly, feel bad it's about for him. Well, it's about time we stop his crime ring.
Well.
So.
Because he's doubly guilty. He's running it and then he's participating three times. He has three brackets in within the pool.
Anybody else have three brackets?
No. I think.
There are a couple with two.
Two? You said two. Yeah.
I'm with Dave on this. One bracket. One bracket.
That's it. Well, here, Burrow sends an email out this morning saying, well, one of those brackets is my son's. Okay, that's even worse. He throws his kids like seven. He throws them under the bus. They took him out, too.
Well, and he's
which is weird, because normally they don't arrest seven-year-olds.
The son is not of legal gambling age. So I think I don't want to call anybody out in my house, but my stepson, Patrick, he is involved in a pool with his mother where there's a big financial payout.
Is that right?
And, you know, Patrick's not of age, so I guess that puts the onus on the mom.
You know, my mom, as you know, is a numbers runner for the mob, and she's been doing that for years. Yeah. So her great-granddaughter is Abigail Grace. So I'm trying to keep them apart because you'll have Abigail Grace, you know, as a maid.
That's right.
You don't want to be a maid toddler.
No.
You know?
No.
It's just awkward. Does anybody suck more than me? Is anybody's bracket as bad as mine?
I think Super Joe would have to weigh in on that.
It's pretty bad, right, Super Joe? Am I last?
Yeah, you're dead last.
Yeah. And I locked up last in the family pool as well. Abigail has a chance to win.
In your two pools, your family pool and this pool, did you pick everything exactly the same?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, simple.
You had a lot of lines the first weekend on yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that Abigail's leading.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, she studies. Yeah. Very smart kid. But yeah, my bracket is as bad as it gets. And I thought it was sweet that Ross reminded me over the weekend. He goes, Pops, you know, there's only five of us. Six with Abigail. He goes, you know, you've never finished top three ever.
Oh, he knows.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
Just didn't need to be brought up.
So do you have to adjust the way you're approaching this?
Yeah, I should probably not do it anymore. That would be the approach I should probably take, is not do it anymore. So,
Dave Bennett, you've been pleasantly surprised by your outcome of your bracket.
Well, I'm not awful, but it seems like I dropped this morning and they haven't even played. But there's one person, Steve Gotzel from our sales staff, who's got multiple brackets, does have Texas Tech as the champion. That's a pretty good pick.
That's wild.
I'm trying to see if
people at
else
Texas
does.
Tech didn't pick them.
No.
Who do you have, true, Dave, in the final?
I had Duke winning. And
who's the coach at Auburn?
The coach at Auburn is Bruce Pearl.
Did he cry?
He's
a very emotional guy.
He is. He cried on Friday night after the game with the kid.
Well, that's because his kid hurt himself,
hurt,
right?
Yeah. I didn't see him cry much yesterday. He was very excited.
Yeah, he was obviously trending for crying.
Yeah, he's got a lot of detractors from his days when he recorded a recruit. And
he was at Tennessee, right? And he was one of the up-and-comers at Tennessee?
He's been around, but he was at one time an assistant in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
He was at Milwaukee, Tennessee, as you mentioned.
I like him. He's fun to watch.
Well, he's got a lot of personality. Yeah. Say that much.
But he was waving his hands around like a conductor. That's the meme that was going viral.
He may not have been hydrated enough to cry.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he was sweating pretty
sweating
heavy.
Pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Shoulder sweat going on.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Here you go, Steve. There's the shoulder sweat.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
Put a coat on, dude.
Yeah,
put a coat on.
Somebody from the PR department came down and said, all right, so during this timeout, we're going to need you to put your coat back on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he did.
You see a lot of coaches, though, who are holding towels. I mean, John Thompson was famous. He always had a towel.
But
right?
There's no rule about sideline attire for coaches, right?
No.
I mean,
no,
schools can make recommendations, but the whole idea of a suit and tie is just sort of, it's almost tradition now.
Well, it is, but a lot of coaches have gone to the sport coat no tie look.
That'd be the Cochran look.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It's got to be so sweaty, you know, after those games.
Well, it's intense and it's hot. And
yeah. Gyms are always hot.
Yeah.
Who's the guy that used to coach at Cincinnati, Bob?
Bob Huggins?
He always just wore a sweater.
He wore like a jogging suit.
Oh, that's true. That's true. He was like the New England Patriots coach's version of hoops.
Kind of. Yeah, kind of like that.
And who's the big guy at Utah?
Rick Majerus.
Yeah, he didn't have a suit that fit. No.
God rest his soul.
Yeah.
He's a great coach. Great coach. But look at Knight. I mean, Bob Knight wore
a sweater all the time.
He was a sweater.
Didn't Knight coach at Texas Tech for a minute?
Yeah, he did at the end of his career. Yeah. That was his last stop before he went to ESPN.
Bertrand thinks I'm just another pretty face. I know stuff.
You do.
Yeah,
Majerus got his start at Marquette.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was an assistant under Hank Raymond's.
Yep.
Was that when you were there?
It was, in fact. I think he was coaching when I was there, yeah.
Did you ever see him in a cafeteria?
No. I covered him, so I'd see him in the locker room and after the games.
He's a big fella.
He was a big WGN listener.
Is that true?
Listened to Milt every night.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wasn't he friends with Cap?
Yeah. That's the other guy who got run out of town.
Oh, is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Bill and Wendy will join us in a second. There's a New York Times story about Al Sharpton that was forwarded to me by an old friend. I don't know if I should say who, but he's a guy a lot of you would know. But anyway, it's a Time story that reinforces what we were talking about before, and that Al Sharpton's a fraud. Think about the Reverend Al Sharpton, and to a lesser extent, the Reverend Jackson as well. Nobody made them mayor, governor, or president of black people. And the only time that they appear to be in that position as a spokesperson for African Americans is because white people, continue to put them in that position. And that's not some wide racial generalization. It's true. I mean, you know, you can talk to people that have more influence over the African American community 100 times over. So Sharpton, who is just a complete con man and has been for the majority of his career, if not all of his career, he should never be a go-to. So anyway, that's New York Times today. Bill Leff and Wendy are joining us just a second. Bill's here actually right now. And Bill, do you...
Steve, I will be here in a minute.
Do you snore?
Yeah, while I'm awake.
Well, that seems odd.
Snore during the show.
That's an affliction I wouldn't expect. but have you ever had a snoring problem?
I don't think so, no.
Well,
I would hear about it if
you.
I did.
Yeah, so your wife's never complained about it?
Mm-mm. Hmm. Why do you ask, Steve?
There's a lot of new snoring devices that came up at CES this year. And not for me.
No.
But I got a friend...
Your friend snores.
Yeah, friend snores.
Yeah.
And it can be tough. Anyway, three smart high-tech anti-snoring devices that you can now buy. There's something called Hupnos, H-U-P-N-O-S.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sleeping mask with a silicone nose piece. I know what you're thinking. Sexy.
Very sexy.
Hupnos can determine the position of a snorer sleeping in and pair to a bedside phone app that listens for snoring. Once detected, the device gently vibrates to move the snorer from their back, a position that where you flop. Because, you know, the thing is, like sleep apnea, the tissue in your throat ends up closing down, and it shuts off your breathing.
Oh.
And that's and then you gasp for air.
Right.
And when you're not gasping for air, it narrows, and that's where the snoring comes
from. Oh.
So this Hupnos.
The Hupnos?
Is
the sexy face mask?
Does it suction? Does it wrap around your head, or does it go up the nostril? How does it secure?
I don't know. I picture it as sort of a full version of the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
That kind of a look?
Sure.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like, anyway. If the app fails and they don't wake, then it activates the nose piece, which delivers expiratory positive airway pressure. It's called EPAP, which allows the wearer to breathe in through the nose more readily.
It'd be funnier if it started squeezing your nose, like pinch it like an uncle used to pull your nose off.
I think if you have an app that can hear you snoring, the app should just go, roll over!
I have an app. It's called My Elbow.
Right?
When Jim snores.
Now, Dave, you have apnea. I have sleep apnea. You have sleep apnea,
yes.
Right? You wear a CPAP?
I do not. I do not. I wear I have an oral appliance.
You wear a jaunty hat?
It's a jaunty hat, yes. And I have an appliance which it's like a mouth guard, and it forces my lower jaw forward, which opens up my windpipe.
That's dental sleep medicine. You had it fitted, right?
Had it made by my dentist.
Yeah, and you got used to it pretty easily?
I did. I've had it for a couple of years now. I don't snore anymore.
That's good.
I don't generally don't wake up choking and gasping for air like I used to.
Well, the key is at an angle, too. So my head is actually 6 feet above my body when I sleep.
That's always good.
There's something called the Philips Smart Sleep Snoring Relief Band. It straps around a user's torso. Oh, this sounds comfortable.
Yeah.
to monitor their sleeping position, and then unobtrusively nudge them onto their sides if they start snoring. And then finally, something called the Smart Nora. This is an inflatable insert that goes under a snorer's pillow, listens via a pair of bedside monitor situations for snoring, and we detected unobtrusively lifts their head to reduce snoring. So, like, apparently it inflates.
I like that one.
Yeah. That's like a Smart Nora.
Didn't you date her once?
I dated Lazy Susan, her sister.
But that is sort of sound like airbags in a car. Like,
yeah,
if you snore loud enough, then the crash goes off and the airbag inflates.
Yeah.
Right. I had a pillow, which, in fact, we advertised it here. I called the Z Pillow.
I remember.
Which actually, I still sleep on it, but it has an app, and it had a sensor which, if I snored, it would just gently vibrate.
Electric shock you.
Yeah. Oh, I married one of those.
There's something called the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed as well.
It's similar, I think.
It touts its ability to detect snoring and elevate a user as needed for relief. And what you're talking about is the Zeke smart pillow,
yes,
Z-E-E-Q
yep.
smart pillow, which has made a few waves as well.
A smart Nora, that sounds like an Australian phrase. I don't know what it would mean, but...
Hey, smart Nora.
It's a smart Nora.
Yeah, okay. Smart Nora, it means like go outside. It's raining. Come in, whatever. What are you guys doing? Oh, I don't ask you that yet, because we have one more break, don't we? Got a break, then we'll come back, and then Bill and Wendy will be here. They're not here yet, but they'll be here next. You're not here, are you?
Right away.
Okay. As we wrap it up on CLTV, thanks for watching, and also on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are here. The one thing I didn't get to in the sleep discussion is I hired a guy who stands next to his bed, and whenever I snore, he pokes me in the ribs. Hey.
Is that a good paying job? I'll do that for people.
Right?
It'd give me great pleasure to wake them
right?
up.
Right? Hey.
Wake up, you.
Just one finger. Hey.
Bill had a good point.
There was a guy in the Cubs who had Ian Hapnea last season.
Oh, you're kidding.
Remember that? Yeah. And Dave informs me he's now in the minor leagues because of
it. I didn't know that. Yeah. Ian Hapnea is where you couldn't close?
Yes.
Is that the deal?
Yeah. It's very sad.
What are you guys doing today?
We have a mind reader. Well, you already knew this, but we had a mind reader coming on the show.
You have a mind reader coming
wait.
On the
show?
We do.
Have you done a mind reader before?
Oh, I'm pretty easy to read. Not much there.
Well, there's no poker face. Like, when we do these crosstalks, as they're called in the business, I look at Wendy, and she's going, shut the hell up so we can start the show. So there is no poker face. What time's your mind reader?
That's at 11:05. And I really am easy to read. I've been hypnotized. I mean, I opened myself up to this. So, Bill, a little close-minded.
This will be
know.
Fun. Can't wait.
Have you ever had your mind read?
No.
There's a little sign that says gone fishing.
Right.
It's closed.
It's always there.
I would think your mind would be cut into two pieces. One would be tennis balls, the other would be toys. That'd be it. That'd be the whole thing.
Those are your two sides of the brain.
The hemisphere.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll come back tomorrow. You want to do that?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's do that. We'll come back tomorrow.